Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy.
Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you have lived through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline studio. And you are here with us, and we've got a bunch of great stuff coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. We have our Wild Card Wednesday. Wild Card Wednesday is when, every morning you guys pick the music bumps, and you pick them, and we have a different theme every morning, and today is Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday.
And that is any artist, any song, anything, so get your requests in now. At 312-981-7200, we want to hear from you, and get your requests in, and any artist, any song, anything, and we'll play them back when we come back from news and from breaks and things like that. That's what we do every morning, and then Wildcard Wednesday is the theme of this morning's Music Bump requests. So that is coming up on the show. Also, we have Martha Bain is going to join us, and listen, she has edited a book about Chicago neighborhoods, and we're going to talk about some of the best neighborhoods, some of the Chicago stories. We want to hear from you about your Chicago story. What are your favorite Chicago stories? And when where do you take people that are must visit places and neighborhoods in Chicago? 312-981-7200 for send us a text if you want, and you can call us. But Martha's going to be here live in studio. We're going to talk about her book, The Great Neighborhood Guidebook. Coming up also, in a little while, Warren Zevon, who is a singer songwriter, one of my favorite singer songwriters of all time, and incredibly talented, songwriter who passed away, back in 2003. And, every year a band called Androgynous Mustache celebrates Warren Zevon's birthday, and they have a big celebration at, Space in Evanston. And it's Wednesday, January 22nd. So we're going to have Charlie Short and Chris Anderson from the band Androgynous Mustache here in studio just to talk about the great Warren Zevon and his contributions to music and about all the cool things that are happening at the birthday bash for Warren Zevon. And this birthday bash, by the way, is the 10th annual birthday bash that they are hosting and playing the music of Warren Zevon. So we talk to them every year about Warren Zevon because he made such great contributions to the world of rock music and was such a great singer-songwriter, and we celebrate his birthday every year. So other things that we're going to be talking about, you can get a scarf that looks like a CVS receipt. You can do that. You can go right now. You can go right now and get a scarf that it looks like a CVS CVS receipt. So, but my producer, by the way, here he is. He's Tom Hush. My great producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
I'm okay. So does that mean that the CVS scarf, does that mean that it's 45 feet long?
Yes. Well, it's not quite that long, but what you can do is go to Etsy.com, and they're selling these scarves that are basically a perfect recreation of those massive receipts that okay. you're getting every time you stop by CVS.
All right.
And it's incredible what people are willing to do on the internet for money.
It is. And it's incredible what people will be willing to buy online and where. And as that is, we'll tell you all about the CVS scarf, but we're also going to jump into some classic fashion trends from the past, like some of the best trends of the decade. If you want to go back in history, entertainment history, on the 15th, of which it will be soon, January 15th, in the year 1981, Hill Street Blues premiered. Maybe you weren't around for it, but if you were, you probably remember that it was huge and a groundbreaking show. So we're going to talk about Hill Street Blues premiere and then just bust out some of the best cop dramas of all time. And we want to hear from you. What are your favorite cop dramas? So, yeah, you call us up or text us. You can text us at 312-981-7200. We'll back that bit when we bust out the best cop dramas. Every Wednesday morning, we play a game with you called Know Your Onion. And Tom is your host. And what we do is we get our first two callers in, and they become our contestants. And you play Know Your Onion. And Knowing Your Onion is this. You, Tom will read a news headline to you, and you have to decide whether it's real or it's from the fake newspaper, satirical newspaper, comedy newspaper, The Onion. So your answer will be either real or The Onion, because the news is just so crazy now and so weird. Sometimes it's very difficult to find out if a newspaper headline or a news headline is The Onion or real. So and everybody's a winner. So when you call in, we want you to call in. You can probably win anything. You can probably win. We also have a Blackhawks Express to play back from last night's very exciting game. As you know, we broadcast the Blackhawks game here on WGN. Very exciting, come from behind overtime win last night. So there it is. So that's what's coming up here on the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is producing, and Vic Vaughn will be giving you your news. And we are here until 4 a.m., so please stay tuned. When we come back, you're going to hear from Martha Bain, the editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. She's been in the PPG Paint Green Room. We're going to bring her in, and you're going to hear from her. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts on Chicago neighborhoods, your favorites, 312-981-7200. Text and talk.
Take me back to Chicago and lay my soul to rest.
Right. Nick DiGilio Show continues here on a Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. That's our music request theme this morning. That's where you pick the music bumps that are played after commercials and after we get back from the news. And so get your requests in now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It's any artist, any song, anything. Okay, and we're back. Tom Hush producing, me, I'm Nick DiGilio, and we've got a lot of great stuff coming up. And right now, I would like to welcome to the show the editor of a book called The Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, which is a new book. And did you know that Chicago has 77 neighborhoods? Did you know that?
No, that's a large number. A larger number than I would have guessed.
It's a large number, and we're going to jump into a bunch of them, and we want to hear from you via text or talk at 312-981-7200 about some of your favorite neighborhoods or some of your favorite things in neighborhoods. And joining me live in studio right now is Martha Bain. Martha, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
No, thank you for coming down. So are you from Chicago?
I'm actually not. That's
you're not.
The dirty secret, yeah.
Where are you from?
Seattle.
You're from Seattle.
I've lived here for 25 years.
And how many neighborhoods have you lived in yourself?
I've actually only lived in a couple. I've been located primarily on the Northwest Side.
Ah.
Near Northwest Side.
Northwest Side, yeah. That's
East Village, Ukrainian Village, mm-hmm. Humboldt Park.
Humboldt Park in those areas. I was asking you off the air because I asked you where you live now, what neighborhood you live in now. You said Humboldt Park, and we immediately started discussing Chance the Snapper.
How can you not?
The alligator story.
Yeah, the book had already gone to press when Chance came around, Otherwise we could have maybe worked him in. Somehow.
It really was a fun story.
It was really heartwarming and a weird. Like I don't know if you went over there, but there were hundreds, thousands of people out there for a couple of days, people selling paletas, and there was like T-shirts and little kids. It was a cross-section of Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. And Chicago, as it says right here, and I'm holding it, 77 neighborhoods?
Well, technically, there are 77 community areas.
Oh, community areas.
These were established in the early 20th century, by sociologists at the University of Chicago, and they've become sort of enshrined. Actually, there were 75, and then later they added on O'Hare and one other one, like Edgewater or something. So those have been kind of enshrined into like the Chicago maps and the way that the city kind of organizes itself. Mm-hmm. But in terms of neighborhoods, as you know, there's far, far more than 77.
Yeah,
actually.
They're
constantly changing.
They're constantly changing, and they're constantly making new ones. Mm-hmm. Like neighborhoods are popping up all the time. Martha Bain is with me. She's the editor of the book, The Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. And if you would like to join us with your favorite neighborhoods or favorite places, the phone lines, text lines are open at 312-981-7200. They keep making new ones.
Yeah, realtors love to do that.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there was no, when I was, my family and I, my folks and I lived, I grew up in what is now considered Wrigleyville.
Okay.
I grew up on Addison about six blocks away from Wrigley Field. When I was growing up, that wasn't Wrigleyville. There was no Wrigleyville.
What was it called?
It was Lakeview. Yeah, it was just Lakeview.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when Wrigley became like a place that wasn't half empty and it wasn't surrounded by gangbangers in a terrible neighborhood, suddenly it was like...
became a desirable attribute.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so that happens... How often?
That happens a lot.
Yeah, how often do you think that happens? Like, we're suddenly... Like, Ravenswood Manor wasn't a thing.
Ravenswood Manor wasn't a thing. I think Ravenswood Manor became a thing maybe when all the politicians started moving in. a little spicier up there.
Yeah.
It happens with... You know, kind of as the housing trends sort of move around Chicago and people, you know, different neighborhoods get designated as hot or desirable or up and coming or undesirable or what, you know. And also as the demographics change, because I think, you know, back in the day, a lot of the neighborhoods were more defined by their demographic or ethnic component. And now that's kind of out the window.
It is.
Yeah,
it is. And I'm a lifelong Chicagoan. I grew up here.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm proud of it. Never lived anywhere except in the city, like in no suburbs or anything like that. Always been. I've lived in different neighborhoods within the city. But never lived anywhere but the city. So I love the city. I love it. And I know a lot of people do. And I know it means a lot. Like, this is a city that means a lot to me. Like, it's my heart and soul. So I've watched the neighborhoods in the city alter and change and become different and get, as we all know, many of the neighborhoods get gentrified and change like that. Because when I was growing up, Logan Square was not what it is now.
No.
At all. And so many other neighborhoods, the same thing. Do you think that that's, is that more of a thing that happens here in this city, do you think? Or does that happen in major cities everywhere?
I think it happens in major cities everywhere. I think it's accelerated or exacerbated by, you know, the actions of local government and the real estate market and things like that. And that changes, that happens in different cities at different speeds.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I mean, you look at any place, like you look at New York, but you also, San Francisco, Seattle, where I'm from, has experienced wild neighborhood change in the time since I left there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a relatively universal phenomenon, but it's also not, it's not across the board across Chicago. You know, the South Side isn't gentrifying.
Yeah, it's true.
So
that's true.
And it's interesting. One of the things that I really noticed in the book was that how the different ways that the contributors to the book talked about neighborhood change, because the book is almost obsessed with the idea of neighborhood change.
Yeah. I mean,
some of it's nostalgia and some of it's more forward looking. But on the South Side, people talk a lot about people writing about neighborhoods on the South and West Sides talked a lot about disinvestment and the sort of the legacies of redlining and segregation. And people on the North Side talk about gentrification. And that was really interesting to me.
Yeah. The book is called The Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, and it's edited by Martha Bain, who joins us live. If you want to join us, you can at 312-981-7200 with a text. Neighborhoods is what we're talking about, places that you go to and places that you love. 312-981-7200. So you edited the book.
Yes.
How were the writers and the stories chosen for the book?
this book is actually the third in a series of books that Belt Publishing, the small press that I work with, has put out. And so we've done a Cleveland neighborhood guidebook and a Detroit neighborhood guidebook, and now a Chicago neighborhood guidebook. And for all of them, we start with an open call for submissions. So put a call for submissions up on our website, spread the word to your networks, try to get outside of your networks and spread the word to other people's networks. And I think I set an initial like 6 month deadline, 6 month window. And then after that, kind of looked at what I had and then strategically tried to reach out and fill some holes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we had a text here from someone. Yeah, we have a text. And again, if you want to join us, you can text us at 312-981-7200 with your comments about certain neighborhoods or places in neighborhoods here in the city. 312-981-7200. 708 area code says, I grew up in Edison Park. What did your guests think of that neighborhood?
Oh, dear. Now I'm going to be put on the spot. I don't know a lot about Edison Park.
It's northwest. Far northwest side.
Yeah, far northwest side. I'm stumped. Sorry.
It's not okay.
So this is the other thing that I have to confess about the book, is it's not comprehensive.
Yeah.
Because if it had been comprehensive, it would be 400 pages long.
No, there's no question about it.
So maybe there'll be a sequel. I don't know. Yeah. But it's definitely selective and idiosyncratic in that way. And as a friend of mine who was visiting from London told me the other day, it's kind of a bait and switch, because he bought the book coming to Chicago for the first time in 20 years. And I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we're going to have more questions, I would imagine. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Martha Bain is the editor of Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. And we'll continue with our discussion about the guidebook and jump into her favorite selections from the book. And we'll do that here, right here on 720 WGN.
There's a road I'd like to tell you about. Lives in my hometown.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and we're here till 4 a.m. Hey, coming up on the show, a lot of really great topics, including, hey, do you want to wear a scarf that looks like a CVS receipt? Warren Zevon will be celebrating a birthday. Warren Zevon, one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time, one of my favorites. They do a Warren Zevon birthday celebration every year, and the band Androgynous Mustache plays a bunch of Warren Zevon music and celebrates his birthday because he was one of the greatest. And we'll have two members from that band in to talk about the event and to talk about Warren as well, and much more. We always want to hear from you, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And right now, we are talking about the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, which is edited by Martha Bain. And Martha is live in studio. Martha, let's continue the conversation.
All right.
So the stories that were chosen, how were they chosen? I'm sure you had more entries than you could put in the book.
I did. And a lot of them, some of them were pretty easy. We got multiple submissions for some neighborhoods, you know, and then I tried to really... I could only really have like one piece representing each neighborhood, with a couple of exceptions, because you always need an exception to prove the rule.
Right.
But mostly I just, I wanted stories that told a story. I didn't want pieces that were just kind of historical overviews. I wanted pieces that had personal hooks, personal narratives.
Right.
I tried to look for pieces that, were not completely drenched in nostalgia. Did interesting things with, a lot of them are people writing about places where they grew up, how their neighborhoods have changed. But I wanted I looked for work that could kind of put an interesting twist on that.
Okay, well, give me some examples of some of the more interesting and favorites of your stories and what makes them distinctive about the city.
One that I really love is a piece about Ashburn. By Tim Mazurek, which is about kind of growing up as the only son of a family of women, and being taken and, kind of living this very sort of, little kid life without a lot of siblings or playmates necessarily, and going to Vito and Nick's, the pizzeria on the southwest side, And
by the way, it's a legendary.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It's amazing. Yeah. At the accents in the bathroom are amazing. Anyway, but he talks about going to Vito and Nick's as a little kid and kind of looking at the guys working in the kitchen as these models of masculinity that he didn't really have in his day to day life.
Yeah,
and I think the phrase he uses is stirring some nascent queerness in me, and sort of uses this little story, very sort of small story, as an example of kind of how he found himself and grew into his identity. And I really love that piece.
That's great. And that's a story that you can find, one of many that you can find. And how many stories are in here?
52
stories about neighborhoods.
Well, there's a couple photo essays and some poetry also.
Okay.
And one sketch.
And it's all part of, one of them by my friend Dimitri Samaroff, contributed.
He wrote about Heart of Chicago.
This is the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, and our guest is Martha Bain. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And we're talking about neighborhoods in Chicago and some of the best writing about that neighborhood. We have texts coming in.
Great.
Let's see what we've got. And if you want to join us, you can at 312-981-7200. Again, the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, edited by Martha Bain, is what we're talking about. 630 area code says, I live in the suburbs, and when my kids were little, we used to make a destination of many of the ethnic neighborhoods like Chinatown, Devon Avenue, and Greektown.
Mm-hmm.
I still love going to visit those neighborhoods. In the early 90s, I lived in Lakeview near Belmont and Racine. I loved all of the funky little restaurants and places like The Alley.
Mm-hmm.
I feel sad when I go to that neighborhood now and all I see are Starbucks and Target. Nothing against those chains, but the neighborhood had lost its character. That's a thing that we talk about all the time.
There's actually a piece in the book that speaks to that very thing, and it's a piece that I also really love. I mean, I love them all, but
yeah.
It's by Emily Mack, and it's about that. It's about the corner of Clark and Belmont, basically. And but what's really interesting about it is that she's a pretty young writer, and so she's not bogged down in the nostalgia for the Punkin' Donuts or whatever that people of our generation might be.
Yeah, yeah.
And she writes about kind of skipping high school and going to hang out at the Starbucks with her friends, and how for her that was an exciting third space where she could, be cool. And it puts a totally fresh twist on the question of neighborhood development.
It totally does. And I never even get, because I'm old and I complain all the time about everything. I never think of that kind of perspective. Like,
yeah,
what about a young person who likes the Starbucks?
Or it's the only option.
Yeah.
She's still getting something out of it.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that piece for making me look at that corner of Chicago in a different way.
Yeah, and then you'll get people.
I'm the same. I was like, it's terrible.
Exactly. You'll get people to walk up to them and go, you don't know anything about this neighborhood. There's a Punkin' Donuts in the alley.
I'll tell you, Sonny.
Yeah. Yeah. The only good place now is L&L. That's it.
Exactly. Which hopefully as a high school student she wasn't going to.
Yeah. where did that piece come from again?
Her name's Emily Mack. Came in over the transom. I don't know her.
Yeah.
That's
really, I've never really even thought about it. I think a lot of people have not really thought about it from that perspective. Like, hey, I'm young. I like to hang out in this neighborhood, even though it's not what it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she doesn't know what it used to be.
Except
for what her annoying parents keep telling her.
So. 630 area code says, I grew up on the far west side along Austin Boulevard in the 60s and 70s during the white flight era. Is Austin the largest neighborhood in the city?
It is the largest. It is technically the largest geographic neighborhood in the city of Chicago. And there's the very first piece in the book is about Austin and talks right about that, about kind of the strange dislocation of crossing the border from Austin into Oak Park and how everything suddenly changes.
Yeah.
And that's a really beautiful piece also.
Yeah. So I guess, I was mentioning, some of the places that I lived. And I guess that would be Austin when I lived off of,
I lived off
of Grand between Central and Austin.
Grand kind of goes like,
it does. And it's
up here. So
I'm moving,
I'm making a shape with my hands.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Yeah. I guess that was Austin. I just wasn't aware of that. And I lived there for a while too with my folks. It's an interesting neighborhood.
Yeah. And Shayna Warfield, who wrote the piece, she writes about, growing up and not really seeing any white people when she was growing up in Austin until, suddenly she started traveling around, got a little bit older and traveled across the border, and all of a sudden it's like, oh look, the streets are fixed and there's all these white people over here.
Yeah.
It's like really, it's sobering.
How many neighborhoods are kind of like that. Like it's you're, you know, things are not taken care of here, and then you can go four blocks over and everything is great.
I think it's you see that. I mean, Oak Park to Austin is particularly profound because it's Oak Park. It's not actually in the city of Chicago anymore.
Right.
But yeah, I think you see it. You see it all over the city.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I couldn't put a number on it, but I think areas, you know, I mean, you especially your neighborhoods on the south side or on the west side, often you'll talk to people and it really like people define their neighborhood as block by block.
Yeah.
There's the block club and that's the organizing principle of the area. And like that block's good and the next block's not good.
Yeah.
And this, you know, and it's really micro level like that.
That's true. We're talking about the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. I'm Nick DiGilio here. I'm your host. Tom Hush is producing this morning. We're here. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Martha Bain is the editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. It's funny. I was just going to mention my producer, Tom Hush. He's in Uptown. He lives in Uptown, which is a real interesting neighborhood and always has been. And has never, other neighborhoods have become, you know, more generic and more gentrified over the years. But somehow Uptown still has kind of avoided that. Uptown's still lovely and weird.
Yeah. Uptown has really strong community organizations. And I think it's got a lot of, you know, obviously has a lot of social service organizations in it that, and a lot of affordable housing still, and relative to the rest of the North Side in particular. And it's got this really, really multifaceted, diverse population.
It really does. So. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking, I wanted to mention Uptown. I wanted to mention my producer, Tom, who lives in Uptown. And that's always been one of my favorite neighborhoods. And one of the reasons why I like it is because it's so diversified and weird. Like you could, and it is, you mentioned block by block. That's one of those neighborhoods.
Uptown's kind of different block by block too in its own way. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, you look, I'm glad that it has not lost. I don't hang out there as much as I used to when I was a drinking man because I was at the Green Mill all the time. Mm-hmm. So I don't hang out in the neighborhood as much as I used to. But I've always liked it, and as I lived in Andersonville, which is a neighboring neighborhood of Uptown, not very far from Uptown, as I lived in Andersonville, I became aware of how much that neighborhood was changing. Because when I first moved in to Andersonville, Andersonville was a completely different neighborhood than it is now. There was much more ethnic, much more ethnicity, it was much more Swedish, which it still is at its core. But there were no, I mean, I remember the uproar when a Starbucks was going to be open there, and they closed down the local florist, and the neighborhood was in an uproar. And now, if you go to Andersonville, there's chains everywhere. But I noticed that, and it never really spread as much east to get to Uptown.
Yeah, I don't know. I would like to know more about kind of like the patterns of property ownership in Uptown. Like, I wonder. It's just harder. The displacement just seems to have not really had as much success over there.
Yeah.
And again, just to go back to the book, the piece about Uptown in the book is really beautiful because it's by a guy named Vitaly Vladimirov, who's an urban planner and who did a project. I think it was for one of his master's projects, basically setting up shop on a street corner in Uptown and asking people to write down their memories on Post-it notes when they pass by. So he has these binders full of Post-it notes with things that people remember about Uptown, whether it was from last year or 20 years ago or whatever. And then he uses those as kind of the spine of the essay that he wrote for the piece. And they're really great little snippets of history.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Are there a couple that stand out?
I mean, I'd have to look in the book.
Yeah, you'd have to look in the book.
It's over there.
I got it in front of you. Yeah, okay. Well, you know what? We'll break here.
Okay.
And we're going to continue the conversation with Martha Bain. And more Chicago stories are coming up here with Martha Bain. She's the editor of Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. What are your most visit places and what are your favorite neighborhoods? Send us a text at 312-981-7200 with your picture. Call us and we continue. All All right. The Nick DiGilio Show continues this. Well, it's night now, but we're here through the morning at 4 a.m. And we're in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Remember, it's Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday.
That is our theme for the morning. You guys, the listeners, you listen and you pick the songs. You pick the bumps coming back from the news and from the breaks, and we start that theme a little bit later on in the show, and it's Wild Card Wednesday, so that means you pick the song, 312-981-7200 for your request, and it's any artist, any song, anything on this Wednesday morning. Later on, you get to play Know Your Onion if you call in, and be one of the first two to call in. Know Your Onion is a game where Tom will read you a newspaper headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or from The Onion. And you'll win some prizes. So there you go. And right now we are speaking with Martha Bain, who's the editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, and our talk continues right now. Martha, we are back. We are here, and so we were talking a little bit about a piece, specifically an Uptown piece.
Yes,
that's in the book, because the book is written. A little reminder that the book is written by people who have memories of great neighborhoods or stories about great neighborhoods, and they were submitted to you, and you edited them. And this particular one that we're going to talk about here now is about the great neighborhood of Uptown.
So this one is called Uptown, A Trip to the Argyle Museum of Memories, and it's by a guy named Vitaly Vladimirov, who's an urban planner, and he did this project as his part of his master's thesis, where he posted up on a corner in on Argyle Street and over a span of months, I think, and asked people to write down their memories of the neighborhood on Post-it notes, and he collected them all.
And he was out on the street.
Yeah, just had a little, you know,
like a kiosk or something.
Yeah, I don't know if it was actually a kiosk, maybe a little table or something like that. So there are a wide range of just little snippets, like just tiny one sentence long histories from people who live there, from people who are just passing through. One of them, like once, was when my mom immigrated from the Philippines, Argyle was the first neighborhood she would come whenever she felt homesick. As an adult, I still come here for food. Mm-hmm. I go to Hong Kee because that's where my parents took me when I was little, and the owner still knows me. And that's it.
Yeah.
It's just a little perfect little thing. Another one that I liked was someone wrote, back in 84, we were evicted and moved to the Argyle area. I attended Stewart Elementary. I recall feeling like I was the odd one out, yet made a couple of friends, and my mom and I bonded more with little knowledge of the area. And now that she has passed, I look at that time fondly, as in that time we only had each other.
Mm.
So that's like a really personal history that's grounded in this memory of place.
Yeah,
and I really like that.
Yeah.
So I like that. I like this piece a lot.
Yeah, that's great. Martha Bain is here. She's the editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. Which is available, Martha. People can get it.
It is available
online and at Amazon.
You can get it online at your online retailer of choice or directly from Belt Publishing, beltpublishing.com.
Beltpublishing.com. Yeah. You also have an event upcoming that we want to tell you about. It's the Empty Bottle Book Club on Sunday, January 26th at 3 p.m. And Empty Bottle is over on Western Avenue. Are you going to read from the book? Are you going to have people who wrote stories there?
I am not. This was an event that was organized completely independent of me. And I need to, it was a, because the Empty Bottle has a book club.
Yes,
and
they
every
do.
Month, one of the participants will nominate, book club, like participants nominate a book to be the book of the month. So someone nominated this book, and they voted, And when I found out, I was thrilled.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I've been going to the Empty Bottle for a really long time, and not so much anymore. But and so I was really excited about that, and so I'm hoping. I actually need to get in touch with them and see. I don't want to be weird. Like, I don't know. Is it weird if the editor shows up at the book
function
club meeting and then the people feel like they can't speak freely? But I would love to come. Like, maybe I'll see if I can go at the end and you have half an hour and answer questions or something if they want.
Okay. Well, anyway.
So, that's but anybody else can go.
Empty Bottle Book Club. It's on Sunday, January 26th at 3 p.m. It's 1035 Northwestern Avenue. What do they call the neighborhood that Empty Bottle is in?
I think that's Ukrainian Village?
Is it Ukrainian? I think it is Ukrainian Village.
Very north end of the Ukrainian Village.
Right. Empty Bottle Book Club, Sunday, January 26th at 3 o'clock at 1035 Northwestern Avenue. Okay. We got more texts coming in.
Oh.
We would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Chewy says, "Hi, great show. It seems nowadays when a neighborhood gets gentrified, they add a West to it, like a West Humboldt Park or a West Rogers Park. Is that that's a thing, right?
That's totally a thing. And actually, it's really funny. I was just on California Avenue earlier today, right, like California and Augusta, where the California Clipper is.
Sure.
And the California Clipper, under new management, I don't remember who owns it now, but there's a something stenciled on the side of the building that says the East Edge of West. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Like, they're trying to, like we're in Humboldt Park, but we're on the east side of Humboldt Park. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really interesting, yeah.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, coming up here on the show as we continue. A couple more texts here. Growing up in Chicago, neighborhoods were I love this. This is a nostalgic thing.
Mm-hmm.
But neighborhoods were defined by the parish that you belong to.
Mm-hmm.
I still tell people that I grew up around St. Ben's. That was the parish.
And because that's a great thing. Like, you can organize Chicago by so many other things. Obviously, you can organize it by ward. You can organize it by parish. You can organize it by transit route or something, you know. So neighborhood is what you make it.
Yeah, absolutely. 312 area code says, what about the Bush, Grand Crossing, South Chicago, Avalon Park, Pill Hill, Burnside, and East Side?
There's a East Side. The Bush itself is not in the in the book per se, but there's a piece about East Side.
Mm-hmm.
About growing up in East Side. There's another piece about, this is going to also undermine my credibility, but I cannot pronounce Hegwisch to save my life. Did I do that right?
I think you did.
I did.
I think you just did, yes.
Okay. So there's Hegwisch, East Side, and that whole sort of Calumet area is represented
in the book.
Yeah.
Martha Bain is with me, and we're talking about the Chicago North Neighborhood Guidebook, which you can get online, and you can go to belt.com, you said?
Beltpublishing.com.
Beltpublishing.com to get it, as well as online. And we're talking about the stories that are in the book, Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. And if you want to join us, talk or text us at 312-981-7200. So now, do you have some favorite neighborhoods in the city? I mean, obviously you like Humboldt Park because you live there.
I do, although I'm, like, again, speaking of the gentrification, it's becoming unaffordable for me.
Mm-hmm.
I am one of the people who lives right on the 606.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if you've been following what's going on in City Hall right now, but there's this proposal to, like, put a moratorium on demolitions along the 606 and try to control the, like, rampant development that's happening in the neighborhood. So that's definitely affecting me to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to pick a favorite neighborhood.
Okay.
I mean, there's lots that I like, and I'm curious about lots of Chicago neighborhoods. I'm curious about Beverly. I've been down to Beverly recently, and a neighborhood I've not spent a lot of time in before. And
what was it made you so curious when you went? Was there anything specific about the place that you thought, you know, I want to learn more about Beverly?
Well, I like Scott Smith's piece in the book is about Beverly, and it's about trying to integrate Beverly, and so I think that that's really interesting. And it's right in the narrative of Chicago, it seems like it's really far away. In my narrative of Chicago, it seems like it's very far away from, like, downtown and sort of the central business district, but. And it feels far from what we think of as, like, the Black Belt on the South Side. But it's not. It's right next to Chatham. It's like it's right there. And so that was sort of surprising to me when I finally started, like, sort of driving around and spending more time on the Southwest Side. I was like, oh, this is all. It's all really attached to each other. And there's this perception in the popular narrative that it's this isolated island, that, like, the far Southwest Side of, like, Beverly and Mount Greenwood, this sort of, like, you know,
yeah.
Separate sphere
mm-hmm.
From the rest of the South Side. But it's all just right up.
It's right there.
Right all there. And so, and it's really pretty.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hang on a second. We're going to continue. We're continuing the conversation. And it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Tom Hush is producing. We got the news that you need to know on the show. And then more with Martha Bain, editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. And you can tell us your stories from the city. Text or call 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio. I'm Nick DiGiulio, your host. Tom Hush is producing, and Vic Vaughn is reporting on the news throughout the morning. Coming up, we will be talking with members of the band Androgynous Mustache. Warren Zevon, who is one of my favorite singer-songwriters, who is one of the best musical artists of all time, who, by the way, is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, has never been nominated. Def Leppard's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I just want to let people know that. Anyway, the 10th annual Warren Zevon birthday bash is happening Wednesday, January 22nd at Space in Evanston. Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from Androgynous Mustache are the band that's hosting it, and they've done this. This will be the 10th one, and they play a whole bunch of Warren Zevon music, celebrate the life of that great singer-songwriter, and we'll be talking with them. Also, Wildcard Wednesday, you can get your requests in.
You're Wildcard Wednesday.
Every morning we have you call in or text in your requests. There's a different theme every morning for you know, what we do when we come back from commercials and what music we play when we come out of the news, and you pick it. And today's a Wild Card Wednesday. That's any artist, any song, anything. So there you go. All right. Our conversation continues with Martha Bain, who is the editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. Martha, welcome back.
Thank you.
And having a great time talking about this conversation. The Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook is stories that are shared by people who live in different neighborhoods or lived in different mm-hmm. neighborhoods, all gathered together and put into one book by Martha.
Mm-hmm.
And they cover a bunch of, there's 52, you said, stories.
Yes.
Something like that.
I'm going to double down on that.
Okay.
Yes.
And then you put them all in one book, and it's about a celebration of these neighborhoods and things like that.
Yes.
And it's a really great book. So, let's see. We want to get to, we have a person here. Before the break, we were talking about Beverly.
Yes.
And your fascination with Beverly, and more recently, your visit there and how you want to really learn a little bit more.
Well, I went. I actually went down to Beverly to go to visit the pizzeria owned by someone, the woman who's the subject of the piece about Englewood, who's Tamar Manassa, who is the founder of MASK, which is an organization called Mothers Against Senseless Killings. Anyway, she's an Englewood activist, but she opened up a pizza shop in Beverly. And I went down there to check it out and to meet her. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of like what took me down there. And I was just, you know, driving around the neighborhood. I'd never really spent that much time there. And yeah. I was just really interested. But it seemed like another, again, a neighborhood that has a lot of contrasts and interesting history.
Our text number and phone number, we want to hear from you. Text or call at 312-981-7200, talking about Chicago neighborhoods. And speaking of Beverly, we have someone who lived in Beverly for 55 years. And her name is Marguerite. Let's welcome her to the show. Marguerite, welcome.
Hi, Nick. I have lived here 55 years. I've been listening to you for 35 years.
Oh.
We have a really nice, stable neighborhood. We've got parks. We have pools. We've got stores. We have great transportation, close to hospitals. It's just a very nice neighborhood with medium price houses. And I think we are the hilliest section of the city. Beautiful home. It's at the top of Longwood Drive.
Mm.
Yes, it does have hills. I noticed that.
Yeah.
Yes, I think we are the only one. The Irish Castle is at the top of the hill.
The Irish
and
Castle.
And Beverly Arts Center, where we have a lot of, you know, plays and activities. So it's a great neighborhood.
Okay. All right, Marguerite. Thank you. There you go. That's good to hear.
Yeah, and I actually could put in this. Nothing is confirmed yet, but there's a possibility that I will be doing an event at the Beverly Arts Center later in 2020 around this book.
By the way, what's the name of the pizza place?
It's called Peace Pizza.
Oh.
I think it might have closed. Actually, I think I read something really recently that they closed it down or was on hiatus.
Yeah, because Rick Nielsen owns a place in Bucktown.
No.
Called Peace.
Oh, no, wait. Shoot.
That's okay. That's okay. Don't worry about it.
It's late. It's really late.
It is late. It is, yes.
Of pizza?
Piece of pizza.
P-E-A-C-E pizza?
Okay.
No, I'm blanking. I'm sorry.
That's
it's
okay.
Late.
That's all right. All right. Well, the book, again, is available. And we're talking with Martha Bain, editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. And you can get it online. And also, one more time, I want to mention that that event at the Empty Bottle Book Club. The Empty Bottle has a book club, and someone chose the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook as Book of the Month. And so on Sunday, January 26th at 3 o'clock, they're going to talk about it. And that's at 1035 North Michigan Avenue at the Empty Bottle.
And if they won't let me come, I'm just going to sit outside the door with like a glass.
Just listen.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about one more piece.
Oh, gosh, I have to pick one more, just one? Okay.
Yeah.
They're all really great. I think one of the ones that I really love is the piece about South Shore.
South Shore, okay.
Which is also, if you've been paying attention, has also been much in the news this week because of the horrible, horrible flooding that happened. The other night was just like coming up into people's basements and all this lakefront property down there. And so Audrey Petty, who's a writer, and wrote this beautiful essay about moving to South Shore with her family and kind of discovering its hidden beauties and charms and its sort of secret beaches. It's really it's stunningly beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been to South Shore, but it's really just all of these really grand sort of like, you know, apartment buildings right on Lakeshore Drive. And and then kind of you get a little bit further inland and it's just like rows and rows of bungalows. And it's a beautiful neighborhood. And she weaves this sort of essay around her own discovery of this as a place where she and her family found some peace and stability and all of this natural beauty with the shooting of Harith Augustus, the barber who was shot on two summers ago by the Chicago police. And so it's sort of a very bittersweet essay that's talking about, again, the contradictions embedded in a lot of Chicago neighborhoods.
Yeah. Okay. That's one of many stories that are featured in the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. Martha Bain is the editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook, and you can get it at online bookstores anywhere. And one more time with the website?
Beltpublishing.com. And it's also available in your local independent bookstore.
Yes, in your local independent bookstore. Yes, we always want to remember to mention that. So, Martha, a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks so much for having
me. Absolutely. And the book is really, really terrific.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Martha, hang out, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay,
that's Martha Bain, editor of the Chicago Neighborhood Guidebook. The Nick DiGilio Show will continue when it is continuing. When we bring in Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from Androgynous Mustache to talk about the great Warren Zevon, singer-songwriter, as they celebrate his birthday with the 10th annual Warren Zevon Birthday Bash. And that's coming up on 720 WGN.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in...
Nick DiGilio here on the Nick DiGilio Show as we continue Tom Hush producing Vic Vaughn in the newsroom. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We are here until 4 o'clock. We are going to talk about... A scarf that looks like a CVS receipt, and then other ridiculous and classic fashion trends. Hill Street Blues premiered on this date in 1981 and became a phenomenon, so we're going to talk about some of the best cop dramas. You can call in, you can text anytime you want at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That song that we just heard coming back from the break there is from the great Warren Zevon. Warren Zevon, a tremendous singer and songwriter, who's probably best known for Werewolves of London, for people who are not big fans of Zevon or might not know who he is. I'm sure you know Werewolves of London. But he's so much better or beyond that, and that's a great song. But he was a revered singer-songwriter. And every year now, there is a Warren Zevon birthday bash. This is the 10th annual one. And the band Androgynous Mustache performs the songs of Warren Zevon live. And it just is a big party celebrating the life of the great Warren Zevon. And it takes place at Space in Evanston. And joining me, as they do every year, basically, is my friends Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from Androgynous Mustache. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
How are
good
you?
Good to be here.
Yeah.
Very well.
Good to see you guys. How you been?
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Well,
Charlie, you good?
Busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real busy. So this started at Quenchers, right? The old bar at Fullerton and Western.
Yes.
And
which is now a pediatric center, I think. Which is hilarious because that's what you needed a lot of times when you left
You left there, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I used to love that bar. I thought Quenchers was a great room, and they had a ton of different beer. They had cheap beer, too, which is always good.
And they were in with that before it exploded. I mean, they always, mm-hmm. I mean, in the 90s, they were like all about beers from Sri Lanka or something like that.
Right. Well, first of all, Chris, you play drums.
I do.
And Charlie, tell everybody what you do.
I'm the bass player and lead singer.
Bass player and lead singer of Androgynous Mustache. And I've known you guys for a long time, mm-hmm. and you guys are great, great at what you do, great musicians, and we all have an unending love for Warren Zevon. For people who might not know who he is, I got a real quick bio here, mm-hmm. just to familiarize some people who might not know who Warren Zevon is. Warren Zevon was born on January 24th, 1947, right here in Chicago, Illinois. He was a singer-songwriter whose poetic rock songs were acclaimed by critics and much admired by other songwriters. Zevon is best known for his 1978 album Excitable Boy, which featured Werewolves in London, his only major hit, as well as the politically inspired songs like Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner, which is one of my favorites of his songs, and Lawyers, Guns, and Money. Zevon died September 7th, 2003 in Los Angeles from mesothelioma 1 year after he was diagnosed. He lasted longer. Because didn't they give him 3 months?
Yeah.
And he lasted longer. And I remember one of the things that he said was that he's got, I really hope I make it for the next James Bond movie. what were you going to say, Chris? Are you going to say, Charlie?
Oh, well, I think this is how we got into James Bond last year.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're a James Bond fanatic.
I'm a big James Bond fan. Yeah.
Big James Bond fan. Have you seen that? Do you like the trailer for the new one?
I'm very excited about it. I think they're doing a lot of diversion. So I think we're going to be surprised when we see it. Whether we like it or not, I think it's going to be a surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it looks really good.
It looks amazing.
Yeah. I think it looks really, really, really
Jeffrey
good.
Wright's back, so we can't go wrong.
Yep. Yeah.
They announced Billie Eilish is doing the song. Yeah.
Billie Eilish is doing the song. It's directed by the guy who co-created and directed True Detective, the first season of True Detective.
And half written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah.
So,
which is just crazy.
That the scene where he says Bond James Bond, I had just watched Fleabag. I was like, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
that's Charlie Short, who, along with Chris Anderson, are members of Androgynous Mustache. And we're talking about Warren Zevon, who was one of the best singer-songwriters of all time, one of my personal favorites. The 10th annual Warren Zevon birthday bash that Androgynous Mustache is going to be performing at, and that's what we're talking about here, is on Wednesday, January 22nd at Space in Evanston. 312-981-7200 if you are a Warren Zevon fan, if you have a favorite Warren Zevon song or memory, if you just want to talk about Warren in general, talk or text with us at 312-981-7200. How did the whole Warren Zevon birthday thing start?
It started in, gosh, it was, there's a series at Reggie's, the rock club Reggie's,
mm-hmm.
Down on the south side, and the talent buyer there, Brendan Joyce, has a series. It's a classic rock album. And we had done it a couple times as kind of a mixed batch of musicians with different albums. And I say, hey, let's do Excitable Boy.
Yeah.
And I think pretty much everybody in the crew was like, what is that? And I don't think it, because it's a mishmash of rock guys and jazz guys.
Yeah.
And they didn't really, it was kind of maybe rung a bell, you know? And then when we did it, it just clicked. And everybody who was on board was like, man, this guy's music is amazing.
Yeah.
And then I kind of said, well, why don't we do a Warren Zevon night, see what happens. We did a Quenchers where, you know, you get 25 people in the room. And
I was one of them.
I was one of them. And it just clicked, and it was good, and it was fun, and it built from there. We had a couple years at Quenchers, a couple years at the old main stage, and 1 year at Martyrs. And then when we migrated to Space in Evanston, that's when it really started to – that's when we found our audience and found where everything just really clicked.
Mm. He's so worth celebrating every year.
Agreed.
You know, he is one of the best singer-songwriters of all time. He had such a unique style and a great sense of humor. That's one of the things about Warren Zevon that I think is so great is his is the humor that he puts in all of his songs.
Absolutely.
I mean, like Rolling the Headless Thompson Gunner is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and there's a lot of songs that you listen to the lyrics and you go, whoa.
Sure.
One of the greatest lyricists of all time. And I think it's great that that you guys celebrate this every year. It's always one of my favorite things. And so who's in the band this year?
It's pretty much the same crew. We have myself on drums. Charlie Short is bass player and lead vocalist. Neil Alger on guitar. Ethan Simone on guitar. Brian Gephardt, an Evanston native, I believe,
yeah,
is on saxophone. Eddie Torres on accordion and harmonica. Dan Engenthrone is on piano and keys. Rachel Drew, the lovely and talented Rachel Drew.
Been on the show many times.
Yeah, she's singing a few songs and doing backing vocals on several tunes. Is that it? Do we have everybody?
That's it.
I think that's it.
That sounds like everybody. Yeah. That sounds like the normal Androgynous Mustache crew.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all on Space is a really great space. No pun intended. It's got to be fun to play there.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like the gig.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you guys about, do you have a favorite Warren Zevon song? If you had to choose. It's hard. That's an impossible question, kind of, considering that Warren Zevon, wrote so many unbelievably great songs. Is there one that maybe it's off the beaten path, maybe a little bit? Do you have one that's...
I would, for me, two. One, Desperados Under the Eaves.
Yes.
If I want to be very inner and thoughtful, and then if I want to go outside and get into a fight, which is all the time, probably Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Oh, man. Yeah. Great, great song. What about you, Charlie?
Certainly Desperados Under the Eaves, but Muhammad's Radio is a song that's a song that I'll listen to no matter how many times we practice it. I go back to that one every single year.
One of my favorites, Warren Zevon songs, and it's hard to narrow down, favorite Warren Zevon songs because he, like I said, he's written so many amazing songs. I love Back's Turned, Looking Down the Path. I think that song is absolutely beautiful. But there are so many, we could go on and on and on about it. Almost, if you look at some of the albums that came out, but a song like Detox Mansion, which is it's just unbelievable. And basically everything off of, every song off of Excitable Boy, except for one.
Yeah.
Which we're playing.
I know.
10th year in a row.
And you're going to dedicate it to me, as you always do.
We might not. I will mention you, but I think we've decided we'll change things up our 10th year.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So there you go. Well, listen, we'll tell you what that song is.
Very soon.
As we talk more with Chris Anderson and Charlie Schott from Androgynous Mustache, celebrating the great work of singer-songwriter Warren Zevon. All right. We shall continue. After this. Nick DiGilio show continues with the only Warren Zevon song I can't stand. Warren Zevon, one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time, and we are here and continuing the conversation with Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from the band Androgynous Mustache, who will be performing Warren Zevon songs at the 10th Annual Warren Zevon Bash, Birthday Bash, on Wednesday, January 22nd at Space in Evanston. Nighttime at the Switching Yard. I just think the song is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And the reason we played it is because the first year that you saw us, we had a limited amount of material. That's off of Excitable Boy.
Yes, it is.
And actually, Charlie will give you a quick background of why it's on Excitable Boy.
Sure. Well, I mean, Excitable Boy is, there's some fairly slow, sad songs.
Yes.
And there's quite a few that never made it onto the record, Thule's Blues being the one I think that everybody knows.
Yeah.
And they gave it to the record company, and they're like, not only do we not hear any hits, because Werewolves was not on it yet, but they're like, there's nothing that's poppy on this. There's nothing that's up. We need something poppy. We need something snappy. And Nighttime in the Switching Yard was the first thing he came up with. And then 63 takes of Werewolves of London with the guys from Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Um, And, you know, but that's where that comes from. It was, yeah. But I think that there's elements of his songwriting and his turns of melody, even in Nighttime in the Switching Yard. Like, it's a throwaway, and it's almost meant to be annoying, so it did its job.
It certainly did its job.
But I think you hear it, if you hear it in the context, if you key in, you're like, oh, this is terrible for him, but it's still not totally terrible.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I got Excitable Boy, and then that song came on. I was like, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah.
Because he's such a, you know, such a beautiful lyricist, and the lyrics are so stupid.
Yeah,
And I was like, "Where did this come from?"
Yeah.
But it's become a running gag between us as friends.
Yes, yeah,
that, because I can't stand that song, and
that's why it will always be part of the set.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you've spent several years dedicating it to me, and you know, and even, you know, Rachel last year and the year before pulled out her phone and sent me a video.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sent me a video while you guys were performing the 27-minute version
great.
Of the song. So,
well, I mean, the song is fairly long on the album, but like I said, the first time we did it, we didn't have enough material, and it just, this groove just kept on going. Like, everybody solo, everybody take a 5-minute solo, just, and then it just kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
And you were there for it.
Yeah, yes, I was. Yes, I was. So we're back here, and we are here with Chris Anderson and Charlie Short of Androgynous Mustache, and we're talking about the great Warren Zevon. And if you want to join us, we would love to hear from you. Send a text or call us at 312-981-720 with your favorite Warren Zevon memory or moment. We are also going to hear a portion of Warren Zevon's final interview with David Letterman. We'll play a little bit of that, too. But we would love to hear from you at 312-981-720. 815, Sentimental Hygiene is my personal favorite. That's Matt. 773, favorite Warren Zevon song is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
Mm-hmm.
Jim sends in a text. I'm with you, Nick. Roland, the Headless Thompson Gunner is my favorite. Yeah, those are all classic.
That's probably the song I get the most nervous playing. So when we start that song,
really?
Oh, absolutely. Just because it's on the drums, you make one mistake, it's like, oh, boy.
Oh yeah,
especially at the very end.
Yeah,
Patty Hearst.
You
got to get it spot on.
Yeah, and God, that is such a funny final line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I laughed out loud when I first heard it. I was like, what? So, what are your favorite songs to play? Do you have a favorite song to play? I mean, I asked what your favorite songs were, but what about playing them? Because that's kind of a different experience. I mean, listening to it is one thing, but actually being a part of the band and playing it is another.
I think our answers are going to be very different. We had a whole conversation about the set recently. I like playing Muhammad's Radio. I like playing Desperados Under the Eaves, and I always like Keep Me in Your Heart.
Yeah.
But there's a song that we do that I can't say the name of. There's two words in it that I can't say the name of,
right,
on radio. That's fantastic. It's a great song.
Yeah.
And if you know somebody who's you know, suffering from some sort of disease.
Mm-hmm.
Even the silly titles that we can't say on the radio of Warren Zevon songs really capture people's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to do those quieter songs because you can tell how keyed in people are.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what about you? You got a favorite Warren Zevon song to play?
Probably Mr. Bad Example.
Mm.
And it's repetitious. It's just about marching.
Yeah.
I'm just doing the same thing for.
Yeah.
4 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's just such a funny, corny tune, and the lyrics are so engaging and hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. It's Mr. Bad Example. That's mm-hmm. what Warren Zevon pretty much was his entire life.
It's my least favorite song to play.
Is that?
we got no debate. Do we pull the plug on this?
Oh, yeah. Well, I love that song.
Well, to sing it, it's unrelenting.
Yeah.
And so I'm always out of breath.
I can understand that.
But people love it. I mean, really, there's not. I don't think there's a song that I hate performing. You know, I mean, I could be performing. We could be performing Bon Jovi songs. So,
God, Bon Jovi. By the way, in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
Warren Zevon.
Warren Zevon, never been nominated.
Yeah, I know.
Def Leppard in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I just wanted to remind people that.
Yeah.
Warren Zevon has never been nominated.
At least they
have started.
At least. at least Depp Leppard had, well, I can't even say their name, at least they have some songs that I don't immediately want to turn off the radio.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Well, you know, Def Leppard, I mean, they have, they, you know, I agree yeah. with you, because I think Pyromania,
yeah.
I mean, and they, you know, they obviously they were incredibly popular in the early yeah. 80s and the mid 80s with Hysteria and Pyromania, yeah. those albums. You know, Pour Some Sugar on Me and, yeah. other, and some of those other songs. And, you know, they are responsible for what I think is a perfect song.
Yeah.
And that's Photograph.
Sure.
Which I think is a perfect song. And I love that song. That's a great, great song.
And I think if T-Rex gets in the hall this year, it will be because of them. Because they said last year, they said T-Rex needs to be in. So if we get T-Rex in the hall, it yeah. would be nice if they could also advocate for Warren. I mean, I know they're not related, but, yeah. you know. So I'm cool with them.
Yeah.
A lot of other people need to be in. Bon Jovi is another. That's another. That's like.
Yeah. No.
Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Can you continue your conversation? This is Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from Androgynous Mustache. They are a band that will be playing a Warren Zevon, big, nice Warren Zevon set at the 10th annual Warren Zevon birthday bash on Wednesday, January 22nd. And it's at Space in Evanston. And it starts at 7:30 and goes till 10:30. Lots of other really great musicians will be there playing with you guys on stage and all that stuff. And I always ask you this, and I want to ask you this now. How did you find Warren Zevon? What was your personal introduction to Warren Zevon? Do you remember?
My brother Brian had the vinyl copy of it, and I remember looking at the cover, which is a picture of Warren Zevon. Mm-hmm. And like, that is a weird looking dude. The shaded, like brown shaded glasses yeah. and the long hair that was like almost like a little chop.
Yeah.
And then.
And then you turned it over and saw the back picture. Which is the gun served
yeah,
up
right.
for
yeah.
dinner.
Yeah. I mean, it actually, it scared me. It really frightened me.
Yeah. I can imagine yeah. that.
I was 7, 8 years old when I first saw it. Like,
78 the album came
yeah,
out.
Yeah. So I was 7 years old and, mm-hmm. and it kind of scared me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but that was it. When you heard, when you heard it, was it a sort of an immediate thing? You're like, oh man, this is good stuff.
The first song that I'd heard from was Excitable Boy,
mm-hmm.
and then I was like, wow, this is super cool. Yeah. I don't know what he's talking about, but I like the groove as an 8 year old. So
and he bit the usherette's leg in the dark.
Did he really do that?
He dug up her grave and built a cage with her bones.
Yeah.
I love him so much, Warren Zevon. Great. What about you, Charlie? Your first encounter?
For sure, it was a classic rock radio here in the hits. Here in certainly Werewolves of London and Laura's Guns and Money. But I know there was many of the stations in town used to do the midnight album.
You know,
and I'd set my tape player and I'd tape it and I'd listen to it. So Excitable Boy was definitely one of those midnight albums mm-hmm. that I heard. And it wasn't really until we started playing it that I got more familiar. But, that's, I think, probably, you know, high school.
Tom, you your exposure to, because you're younger than us. You're of a different
yeah,
generation.
That is true.
Because I was 13 when the record came out. And yeah. and I immediately jumped on it. And well, when Excitable Boy came out,
yeah.
and then I went back and
yeah.
you know, to the earlier stuff. But yeah.
So Warren Zevon was at first to me the guy that copied Sweet Home Alabama.
Oh,
because I didn't know. I was just like, what is this song? This isn't Skynyrd.
What the hell?
Oh, man.
I'm sorry.
He's 26, by yeah. the way. He's 26.
I'm just here to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But once
so
I...
So we should explain. Your exposure to Warren Zevon was through a terrible Kid Rock song where he sampled...
No, Sweet Home Alabama. Or not Sweet Home Alabama. What's the one that Werewolves of London sounds like?
So is it Sweet Home Alabama?
It's the Kid Rock. So there's a Kid Rock song that eventually goes into Sweet Home Alabama and switches from... The Werewolves of London groove
yeah.
and the Sweet Home Alabama.
That's what I thought you were yeah. referencing, was the Kid Rock song where it's yeah. like half Sweet Home Alabama and half
yes.
Werewolves of London.
Yes.
This terrible Kid Rock song. I yeah. thought that was your first exposure.
But a lot of people perform all of Sweet Home Alabama in the middle of that song. I was on stage and that song was called, and I was like, well, I know these chords, and I'm just going to hold my breath.
Yeah.
So oftentimes, live, they'll do all of Sweet Home Alabama in the radio version. I can't believe I know this. I'm sorry, but yeah, in the radio version, it's a clip of Sweet Home Alabama. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then I got schooled in when I got into college radio, when I started going to college, and there's the music director there, Chloe, who basically introduced me to the wide world of Warren Zevon and the greatest philosophy of all time. You know, enjoy every sandwich.
Enjoy every sandwich. Yeah, because you never know when you're going to go.
Yeah.
Enjoy every sandwich. That was, you know, we've had some recent deaths. You know, we lost Neil Peart this past week. That hit a lot of people hard.
Yeah.
And we just celebrated, you know, the anniversary of Bowie's death, the anniversary of Lemmy's death was you know, pretty recently. And you know, sometimes these songwriter and musician's death hit hard. Zevon hit hard. I mean, it was longer because he was diagnosed, made it public, recorded an album while he was sick, you know, made appearances, and it was just this, I don't want him to die. I can't, you know, I mean, he's going to die. He's going to die soon. And, you know, he was diagnosed with cancer and then was told that he only had 3 months to live, and he lasted over a year. And which was awesome that he was around for that little bit longer. But like the stuff that he was doing at that time was so great,
yeah,
that it made the tragedy even like anticipating what was going to happen to him was like, this can't happen to this guy.
Yeah.
It can't happen to this guy. Chris Anderson, Charlie Shorter here. Androgynous Mustache is the band. The 10th annual Warren Zevon birthday bash. Listen, if you're a Warren Zevon fan, you have to go to this. You have to. He's one of the greatest singer songwriters of all time. And these guys do an unbelievably great job. And Warren Zevon's final interview on David Letterman was truly a great moment in late night television. We're going to hear some of that next. Text us your thoughts on Warren Zevon. You can call us with some of your favorite Warren Zevon songs. And it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And coming up a bit of that final interview with Warren Zevon. The great Warren Zevon. Nick DiGilio here as the Nick DiGilio Show continues. Tom Hush is producing, and Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. And we're talking more with musicians Chris Anderson and Charlie Short from the band Androgynous Mustache. They'll be paying tribute to the great singer-songwriter Warren Zevon next week on what would have been around. Is it actually on his birthday? No. No.
2 days before.
2 days before, and he would have been 72.
Mm-hmm.
He would have been 72, which would have been the same age as David Bowie this year.
Yeah.
So, also, next, the news is next from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay. We have someone on the line who wants to talk about Warren Zevon. And if you want to join us with a talk or text, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to be hearing a little bit of the final interview that Warren Zevon did on David Letterman. And here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? Good. It's great to hear you. And one of my favorite songs is "Rolling the Headless Thompson Gunner."
Right.
And if you go on the internet, you see a logo of the continent of Africa, two Thompson guns, and above it it says Ireland, Libya, Congo, something else, and Berkeley.
Right.
I would pay $100 for a T-shirt of that. I don't know if they make them or not.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can imagine if people coming up to me saying, what's that?
Yeah, and, what,
you know,
is that?
People, I'm 60 years old, and I was a teenager, and Werewolf stopped me dead in the street. The only song ever in my life I heard it playing out of the house. And there's so many people my age that don't even know who he is. My age.
No, I know.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, Mike, thank you, man.
You're welcome.
All right. There you go. We got some texts coming in. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. I'll read a few more of these, but why don't we listen to some of this interview? The last interview that that he did, Warren Zevon did, was on David Letterman, and obviously because they had a very special relationship, and Letterman worshipped Warren Zevon. Whenever there was a time when Paul Schaefer couldn't be there, like if he was doing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or if he was doing some other stuff, Warren Zevon always became the band leader, and they had a great rapport. And Letterman unabashedly loved Warren Zevon, as well he should have. So the final interview that Warren Zevon gave was on Letterman's show, so we have a little of that.
When I first heard about this, I think that you were in touch with Paul's assistant. He actually had a conversation with him,
yeah.
And he said it was the most bizarre thing, kind of the stunning revelation of this, but yet Warren was making jokes just like that. Now, how is that possible? I'm not sure I could make jokes like that if I had that
sure
information. You think so?
I know you would.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you, to me, you look and seem remarkably healthy. I mean, that's kind of an odd...
Well, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by cosmetics.
How do you feel?
I don't feel as bad as they say I am.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I... That's okay. That's a good deal.
And you have spent a lot of time recently working very hard, haven't you? Working on another project.
Yeah. They certainly don't discourage you from doing whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's not like bed rest and a lot of water will, straighten you out.
And how is that work now under this circumstance, living with this diagnosis? How is the work now compared to when you assumed you were healthy, when you were only going to see Dr. Stan?
I'm working harder in you put more value on every minute. You do live. I mean, I always thought I kind of did that. I really always enjoyed myself, but it's more valuable now. You're reminded to enjoy every sandwich and every minute of playing with the guys and being with the kids and everything.
Yeah. Warren Zevon.
Yeah.
Passed away. He was diagnosed with mesothelioma, which was not... on the tip of people's tongues back in 2002. It is now. There's a commercial every 5 minutes for mesothelioma and lawsuits and, and that now everybody knows what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's oddly, it is associated with asbestos,
mm-hmm.
Which I find, Warren Zevon being exposed to asbestos, odd, if that indeed was how he...
I think in the book they talk about that, about how it was also his smoking.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a combination. I think that there's a tendency with different – I unfortunately have more experience with cancer than I'd like, and I think that what tends to happen is there are different types of cancers that tend to fit into certain categories. But and I think
now every commercial that you see for mesothelioma, asbestos is mentioned every single time.
Yeah.
So we're talking with Charlie Short and Chris Anderson from Androgynous Mustache. They are a band that are going to be playing a bunch of Warren Zevon in honor of the great singer-songwriter's birthday and the 10th annual Warren Zevon birthday bash with a bunch of other amazing musicians, and it'll be at Space in Evanston. A couple of texts have come in. 224 says, "What do you mean Switching Yard is a laughable song? Lyrics are stupid. It's right up there with other great blues songs about trains." Been drinking? Been drinking this morning? 312, "My wife wonders why I sing Woodrow Wilson's Guns when she asks me if I've heard everything." 847, "I love all of Warren's music. The first album I bought of his was The Envoy. Love that song in the whole LP. I played it over and over again." I remember seeing Warren Zevon at the Riv on New Year's Eve, like in 87 into 88, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Sentimental Hygiene time. That
correct.
Would be when Sentimental Hygiene mm-hmm. was out. Yeah, sure. I saw him on New Year's Eve. At midnight, they played Auld Lang Syne. And he, lit up a cigar and was just cracking jokes during the whole... Because the band was playing it, and he was just kind of, cracking jokes and not really singing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember how cool he was. We were right on the floor. We were right in front, And that was one of my favorite Warren Zevon concerts, was New Year's Eve. I'm pretty sure it was at the Riv. I'm almost positive it was at the Riv. You ever see him live?
Saw him twice. I saw him solo at Park West in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw him with his crew in, I think, 1980, either 9 or 1990, I think in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, he just shredded the joint. Just,
yeah.
I mean, that was the thing. Like, people always knew him as a songwriter. And it wasn't until the live album that came out where he just, he was a maniac.
Yeah, he was a maniac. He was completely amazing live. I think I was at this one of the same shows that you were at the Park West. I saw him at the Park West a couple of times. Because I saw him at the Park West a couple of times, Riv, and, geez, I've seen him four times. I'm trying to remember where the other place was, but, so what about
you? I never got to see him live.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people did.
No.
Because if you discover the guy, he wasn't really known as a guy who toured like a maniac.
Sure.
He played live every once in a while.
Yeah.
So he
was definitely doing, I mean, I'm, you know, a few years younger than you guys. And as I was old enough to go to 21 and over places by the time he died, but I would think in the 90s I was not old enough.
Yeah.
And I know from looking at his history that sort of between that early 80s period, the Sentimental Hygiene period, he was mostly touring solo or with a guitar player.
Yeah.
And basically at clubs where it was just 21 and older.
Yeah.
You know, they were just in a van and driving around.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Tom, we have other audio to play. Did you want to play another piece of audio?
Yeah, I've got a little bit here from his final performance on that
David Letterman.
Yeah, in the episode of Letterman. It's Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner.
This is the final performance that he gave.
So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. And that son of a bitch, Ben Owen, blew off Roland's head. Thompson, for war. Time stands still for Roland. This evens up the score. They can still see his headless body stuck into the night. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun.
So that was his last performance, and it was on David Letterman. So a couple of texts here, 773. A Nick and crew, my favorite lines and songs are, his hair was perfect from Werewolves of London, and the poop has hit the fan from Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
Yeah.
708 says, Zevon's son stated that asbestos exposure may have happened in his childhood when he played in the attic of his father's carpet store.
Huh. Okay.
So that's his son. His son said that. So maybe that's it. I don't know how you can trace it back. Well, either way, we lost him. He was too young. And you guys are going to celebrate the life and the music of Warren Zevon on Wednesday, January 22nd. 10th annual Warren Zevon birthday bash. One of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time. Chris Anderson, Charlie Short from Androgynous Mustache. Have fun, you guys.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming down. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having
us. Absolutely. Okay, we've got the news continuing the show right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here, continuing the show this Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday. Give me Wild Card Wednesday. Every morning, you pick the songs that we play when we come back from commercial break and news. And the theme this morning is Wild Card Wednesday. So that means any artist, any song, anything, get your requests in now, 312-981-7200 as we continue. My producer is Tom Hush. I'm Nick DiGilio. Tom, who requested the Ozzy?
That's coming to us from Sam.
Sam.
A little Steal Away the Night.
A little Ozzy.
Blizzard of Oz.
Yeah, man. Ozzy. I remember when Ozzy left Sabbath, people thought his career was over. He was in terrible shape. He was had addiction issues. He was broke. And Sharon Osbourne came into his life and kind of basically saved him from this pit that he was in. And you probably have heard the stories before about Ozzy Osbourne.
I believe there was one where he relieved himself on a pool deck and then licked it up. Or maybe that was Motley Crue. I know he may have snorted some ants.
He snorted ants.
There was. Yeah. He snorted ants.
Yes. Ozzy snorted ants. I think Motley Crue was responsible for the... Although Ozzy Osbourne did urinate on the Alamo.
Mm.
And he did get arrested for it. So, but yeah, Ozzy. You gotta love Ozzy. But then he turned his career around. You know, when Blizzard came out, people were like, what? A lot of that has to do with Randy Rhoads, the late, great Randy Rhoads, one of the greatest metal guitarists of all time. Again, taken from us way too soon. But, you know, the discovery of a young guy who could play guitar the way that Randy Rhoads played and have him in your band, that was a game changer for Ozzy. So, and the relationship that he had with the late, great guitarist Randy Rhoads was pretty special. So, okay. Yeah. How you doing? You all right, Tom?
Yeah, feeling good.
Yeah, good. Feeling good. Good, good. All right. So, we're going to talk fashion. And if I would love to hear from you, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, about maybe some of the dumbest fashion ideas of all time. And we're also going to talk about some of the most influential and biggest fashion trends. Decade by decade. So we're going to go through the decades here and talk about some of the big fashion trends. But I also would like to talk about terrible fashion trends. Because there have been a lot. And there continue to be a lot. So I would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Text us or call us. 312-981-7200. And let's talk about some terrible fashion. Because... you can now buy a scarf that looks just like a super long CVS receipt. I went to the CVS right down the street last night. We had a meeting here at the station, as we do sometimes, and it was kind of early, and I didn't want to go home, and so it wouldn't make any sense to go home. So when we had our meeting, and then. I was hungry because the meeting was kind of long, and so and I hadn't eaten for a while. So I went to the CVS just to grab something out of the cooler. So I got like a bunch of Genoa salami and some cheese and stuff. And they make you go to the self check
after a certain point. Yeah, generally. Yeah.
So I mean, there was nobody there to. I mean, I only had one item. I had it was a prepackaged Genoa salami cheese thing. You know, you peel the plastic top off of it and you eat it. That's what, you know, and I was just going to drink water here at the station. So I only bought one item. And like a moron, I bought a bag. I bought a plastic bag.
That's a rookie mistake.
It's a total rookie. I don't do this very often. I don't go to CVS. But, you know, the receipt was not long. So in the self-checkout, is the receipt shorter?
Generally speaking, when you go to the self-checkout, when you check out anywhere at CVS... if you put in, like, if you have a CVS card, which many people do.
I do not.
Yeah. If you have a CVS card or you do the phone lookup, it prints out this insanely long thing of coupons for stuff that you may not ever buy.
Right.
Like, I frequently get them for makeup.
Mm-hmm.
When am I going to be buying Revlon makeup? When are, you know?
Yeah. So I don't get the giant receipts because I don't have a CVS card.
I believe that's why.
Okay.
But CVS is notorious for having those insanely long.
Oh no, I know.
Details.
I'm absolutely, yeah. I know. And it, you know, there was a time when someone took their CVS receipts and cut them up and put them on the main desk in the newsroom for anybody to take. And they were, but it was just the 9,000 coupons you get with every receipt. They cut them up and put them, and there was a stack of, like, coupons for items, again, like you said, items that, like, not a whole lot of people are bound to purchase. So I know they've taken a lot of criticism for this for several reasons. We're talking about this the CVS. If you want to join us, 312-981-7200. The CVS receipt, the super long CVS receipt, has inspired a scarf. So we're talking fashion, but I know they've caught a lot of flack because it's a waste of paper.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's ridiculous, and I'm sure that you know this. I've seen pictures or videos of people with these receipts, and they're absurdly long. Like, obscenely and absurdly long, and unnecessarily that long. So I can understand why people get upset about it. But now you can get a scarf. You can wrap your neck in a CVS receipt. You can do that. That sound like a fun thing? I think it sounds insane. The internet's just weird, man. I've just stated the obvious, but the internet's weird. You can see weird stuff on there. From a broken window blind to Meghan Markle's wedding veil, CVS receipts have inspired some very popular memes. But now, the notoriously long pieces of paper are being transformed into actual scarves, and they're going viral. While the receipts have long been a popular Twitter joke, it was only recently that they found their way onto Etsy in fleece form. Alan Salganik, who runs the Etsy store receipts scarves from his home in Chicago. Oh, he's from Chicago. Oh, that's nice. That's a nice local connection. Told Insider that he was inspired to create the $19 CVS scarf when people he saw rocking the actual receipts as scarves as a joke. I thought to myself, why not make an actual scarf? I'm sure it'll be far more comfortable than paper. I made one for myself initially and got so many compliments I figured why not sell it. As he designed the scarf, Salganik knew he wanted to use good quality material that was thick enough to keep you warm but thin enough to still be multi-seasonal. The trickiest part of getting items such as barcodes and small text to look sharp when printed onto cloth material, that was the worst part. He also used a real CVS receipt because he wanted the design to be authentic. My favorite part of the entire receipt is the $1.67 pack of gum. The scarf was an instant hit, which initially surprised Salganik. Catherine Hughes, who runs the Etsy store Stuff You Have They Want, also sells her own CVS receipt scarf. So it's a thing. Hughes, who works as a teacher, told Insider that she was inspired when she saw one of her students wearing a CVS receipt as a joke. I thought it was hilarious, and the idea for CVS scarf was born, she added. Hughes said she is always looking for ways to make a little more money for her family from home so that she can spend more time with her son who has cerebral palsy. And there aren't just CVS scarves on the market. One Etsy seller designs ties inspired by receipts. Jordan, who runs an Etsy store suitable ties from his home in Delaware, told Insider that he started to make CVS ties because he thought it would be a fun conversation starter. The dimensions of the receipt are nearly identical to a necktie, so I thought it would be a perfect fit. Jordan said he modified the image of a CVS receipt, including its barcode, to make sure that it couldn't be somehow used as an actual receipt. And while CVS receipts include the name of the employee who is running the register, Jordan made sure that his ties were completely customizable. All right, 312-981-7200 for text. Get us in here. Get your text in. Get your talk in here. What do you think of this scarf? A scarf that looks like a CVS receipt. It's weird. The internet's weird. And we're going to jump into fashion from the past, fashion trends, and some of the worst fashion. What do you think is some of the worst fashion that you've ever witnessed or worn? 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you. Yeah. DiGilio Show continues on through the morning here till 4 a.m. It is a Wednesday morning, which means Wild Card Wednesday.
You mean Wild Card Wednesday?
That's where you program the music bumps, and this morning's theme is any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that music bump?
That's coming to us from David Monroe. It's I'm Gonna Love Me Again by Elton John.
Just nominated for an Academy Award.
And honestly, a spectacular song.
Good song. Real good song. One of his best in a long time. Yeah. Disappointed that Taron Egerton from Rocketman did not get nominated for playing Elton John because it was a great performance. Great performance. So, yeah, we're talking about fashion. And the fact that there are now scarves that look like CVS receipts available. Question is, would you buy one? Would you order one? 312-981-7200. And if you, it's just, they're so weird. But if you've seen it, would you buy it? And other bad fashion trends from the past. What are some of the worst fashion trends from the past? And we're going to go decade by decade by some of the most influential and crazy fashion trends ever. But we got a bunch of texts coming in, and we want more from you. We want you to send a text, and that's 312-981-7200. 815. Hi, Nick and Tom. Bad fashion choices. Parachute pants. Yeah, parachute pants were not good. Not a good look.
Is that mainly 80s?
Yeah.
Who popularized that?
The 80s were the worst decade for fashion. People talk about the 70s, you know, being bad. The 80s were the worst. The worst. The hair, the clothes. I mean, it's funny to look back at it. But like in terms of looking like a moron, more people looked like morons in the 80s than they did in the 70s. They looked a little unkempt and sloppy and high in the 70s, of which they all were. But the 80s was just like, what is happening? Parachute pants were an 80s thing, and obviously then, you know, hammer pants, taking you know, pants to another level.
The evolution of pants.
But... Did people actually wear hammer pants? Was that a thing? I think only Hammer wore hammer pants. Were people walking around? I don't remember whether people, we weren't even alive when the hammer pants took off. We can't touch this.
No.
I think only Hammer wore hammer pants. I don't know if that became like a widespread fashion trend. And parachute pants are similar. But Hammer took it to a whole, I mean...
You can buy hammer pants still.
Can you?
$20 on Amazon.
For a pair of hammer pants?
Yeah. Where it's like, they're almost like, kind of like a genie pants.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what,
totally what they're looking like.
Yeah. So also, bad fashion choices. 815 says, parachute pants, Farrah Fawcett hairstyle, funny and bad. Yeah, the Farrah Fawcett hairstyle was something. It's funny because I love to watch. The old Match Game reruns. Talked about it on the air many times. The old Match Game reruns are just a fantastic thing to watch, especially the ones from the mid or late 70s, to see some of the hairstyles. And that Farrah Fawcett sort of luxurious, feathered, you know, parted down the middle hair, layered, was massive. And everybody was doing it. And the whole feathered hair thing was big when I was in high school. That was a big thing, parting your hair down the middle and feathering it back. It was big among both sexes. Both girls and boys were feathering their hair. But yeah, now that the Farrah thing was huge, and you know, watching the reruns of Match Game, and when some of the female contestants come out, it's pretty great. There was a guy on Match Game I watched yesterday morning who had a substantial mustache. Like a really substantial mustache that went all the way to his ears.
Ooh.
It was one of those big, thick mustaches that went all the way to his ears.
Jeez. He looked like probably looked like a president from the
1800s. Oh, that's exactly. I mean, he looked like, and they kept cutting to his wife because he was winning. You know, he would win the super match, and they kept cutting to his wife. They were cutting to his wife when he was waiting for the celebrity, probably Richard Dawson, to write down his answer on the card that he would hope to have matched so he can win, you know, the $2,500 or $5,000 or whatever it was. And his wife was hot.
So she didn't have a matching mustache.
She was beautiful. She was like really like 70s hot. And then they cut back to Mustache Man, and I'm like, what? What's going on here? What has this guy got? So, anyway. Yeah, fashion's a weird thing, and that's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. What are some of the weirdest fashion trends, some of the worst? And then we're going to go decade by decade with some more. This has all been inspired by the fact that you can now buy a scarf that looks exactly like a CVS receipt. That's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200 for text and talk. Here's Becky on WGN. Hi, Becky.
Okay. I was telling him, I have a friend, and thank God she don't live in Illinois, but she wears these, they call them leggings, I think. Anyway, they're skin tight, and she's pencil thin, and they go to the ankle, and they just, I don't even think she owns any other pants but them, because she wears them 24/7, and they're hideous. If she, you know, could only see herself, she probably would never wear them, but they're ugly.
Yeah, no, that's a very popular thing. That's a very, very popular thing is leggings, and lots of people wear them. Lots of people wear them. I don't really understand. Now, when I think leggings, though, I think, Becky, thanks for the call. I think of the leggings that people wore when they did aerobics, that ladies wore when they did aerobics. Now, the leggings that the caller, that Becky was talking about, are these extremely tight pants. That are called leggings. The leggings from the 80s were a different thing. If you look at the, if you want to Google, are you familiar with leggings?
Well, I'm familiar with leggings as they are now, which is the.
Oh, you're not familiar with the leggings of the 80s?
No, I guess not.
Okay.
What's the fundamental difference here?
Yeah, there's a big difference.
Oh, God.
Google Jane Fonda workout tape. Yes, just okay. Google image Jane Fonda workout tape.
Okay.
And what should pop up is a picture of Jane Fonda wearing the classic 80s leggings that were worn during, usually during aerobic sessions.
So are those like those ankle things?
The big, like, they look like socks.
They look like they've been sewn.
Yeah, they are. They're it's,
okay.
And that was a thing in the 80s, a huge thing.
So that was when you said a legging, it was more like that.
That was a legging in the 80s. Leggings are completely different than they are now.
Woof.
But those were leggings in the 80s. Have you seen Flashback?
I've seen Flashdance. I don't know what I called them. I just didn't think of them.
They're leggings.
They're leggings.
Yeah.
So that's what all the fab fit fun ladies of the 80s were wearing.
It was a huge 80s thing, especially, you know, because aerobics was also a huge fad in the 80s. Aerobics, you know, especially the Jane Fonda aerobics tapes. They were massive, and she had a whole different career outside of acting for a bunch of years, just plugging the
workout tapes.
I'm not kidding. Yeah.
And the leggings. Wow. Not a bad look, honestly.
Yeah, so those are the leggings that I think we're going to be talking about in a couple of minutes here when we go decade by decade, because I think in the 80s, the leggings will be mentioned, and there's no question about it. So, all right, let's continue talking about terrible fashion decade by decade, and would you buy a CVS scarf that looks like a receipt? 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues.
Take away the trees and the birds will have to sit upon the ground. And take away their wings and the birds will have to walk to get around. Take away the bird bats. Dirty birds will soon be everywhere.
Nick DiGilio here. We continue on through the morning on this Wednesday morning live in the Skyline studio. We're here until 4, and then we go over to visit with our friends over at Bradley Place for the WGN early morning TV news. That's from 4 to 5, and then Bob Surratt is at 5 o'clock with your morning drive. It's Wild Card Wednesday.
You mean Wildcard Wednesday?
You program all the music bumps. We have a different theme every morning, and this morning's theme is Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Glenn, Tennessee Birdwalk by Jack Blanchard. And it's Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan. Misty Morgan.
There you go. So we're talking about fashion. There's a new fashion thing out there you can get online at Etsy, which is a scarf that looks like one of those long, stupid CVS receipts. That seems weird and crazy, but there have been a lot of weird and crazy fashion trends over the years, some of them really bad. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Send us a text, I'll read it, or call us, 312-981-7200. People were texting in to Tom saying that I got the term wrong about leggings. They were leg warmers, and that's right. I made a mistake. I thought they were called leggings, but they were leg warmers. They wore leggings underneath the leg warmers, and this was the big aerobics craze in the 80s, you know, that was started with things like Flashdance and things like you know, the Jane Fonda workout tapes. So I was mistaken, leg warmers. So all right, stupid fashion trends that some of us fell into, and some of the most influential fashion trends, and we'll bust through some of those as well. But we do want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Here is Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
A lot of the time, they still feather your hair, you know? Like on the sides and stuff.
Yeah.
I think they just call it thinning out now.
Okay. Everybody's hair was like that in the 80s.
Yeah, and you still see people with that same style sometimes.
Yeah, I guess I don't look very closely.
And how about the corduroys of the 70s?
Yeah, the big thick corduroys.
Yeah, everyone had them, and when you'd walk, it'd make this funny sawing noise.
Yep, make that whoosh sound.
Yeah. Yep.
So feathered hair and corduroys. That's a good look for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Paul.
Okay, thanks.
Let's see. Knickknack Paddywhack sends in a text, and we want you to, too, 312-981-7200. My silly fashion choice would be those nutty-looking umbrella hats from the late 80s. People still wear those. I mean, maybe not quite as often or as brazenly, but people still wear those stupid umbrella hats. Let's see. There's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
I was just going to comment on the leg warmers, but I think they also call them ankle socks.
Mm-hmm.
The ones, but the full look was, you also had to have the headband, the sweatband, and the sweat wristbands that went along with it too.
Yeah.
But I think my worst decade would have been, well, the whole disco craze. Everyone bought into it. And
I still don't think the fashions that are associated with disco are as bad as the fashions from the 80s. I think the 80s are worse. I think the 80s are worse than disco.
True. You know, you didn't have the leisure suit. But that was pretty bad in the 80s, too.
All right, Glenn, thanks.
All right.
So, seriously, the 80s. And I had every bad hairstyle you can imagine in the 80s. I had every bad hairstyle. The sides were shaved close. The top part was spiked up. At one point, I had a rat tail. I had a mullet. I had a pretty good mullet.
There's no such thing as a pretty good mullet.
No, I had a pretty good mullet. By 80s standards, I had a pretty good mullet. You go back and look at pictures of Live Aid and look at the substantial mullet that Bono has. If Bono had a mullet in 1985, You grew a mullet. That's what you did.
It's just scary to think about.
Bono had a significant mullet. And, you know, obviously Bono considered one of the coolest and sexiest and best lead singers ever. And in the mid-80s, when U2 was just at the top, he had a ridiculous mullet. All you got to do is go back and look at the footage from Live Aid. Just go back and look at the footage from Live Aid and take a look at that mullet. So it was not ridiculous to have a mullet in that time period. That's when I had one. I had one when Bono had one because I was like, oh, Bono's got a mullet. So it must be cool. Yeah, no, I went through all the bad hair you could possibly have in the 80s I had. It was embarrassing. Not so then, but now. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how we doing tonight?
All right, what's up?
Well, you were talking about all these fashion faux pas, and it kind of dug at some scars that I had suppressed mentally for all these years. And basically, what about the pacifiers that the girls used to wear in the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah.
They had the great big binkies that hung around their neck.
Yeah, they had the pacifiers, but that was also a rave thing. That was really closely associated with kids who went to raves. It was like you had your glow stick, you drop some E, and you put a pacifier in your mouth. But it was a bit of a fashion trend, but it was more closely associated with raves.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're talking about you had every bad haircut in the 80s. Did you ever have the wings cut in the side of your head?
No. I did not have wings cut in the side of my head. I did have I had the feathered look. I had the mullet. I had the spiked hair. I had the rat tail. I had all the sort of new wavy 80s, very, very, very 80s, bad hair choices. 847, when I was in junior high and high school, GNCO jeans were so popular. Wider the leg, the cooler you were. They were ridiculous looking back on it today. Wooter says, I wore Chicago Bears Zubas pants to school in 1992. Awful. Yeah, the Zubas pants I don't quite understand. 708 says, oh, God, parachute pants. 773 area code members only jackets. I had one. I had a members only jacket. I absolutely did. Again, keeping in step with the fact that I had like really really terrible fashion faux pas in the 80s. But yeah, members only jackets. I had one. Everybody had a members only jacket. You weren't cool if you didn't have a members only jacket.
Well, because then you'd be a member.
Yeah.
Of the club. Yep. Of having a jacket.
Yeah.
Were they, I mean, they're not that cool.
They were in the 80s.
So weird.
Yeah. Everybody had a members only jacket. 773, shoulder pads are back, and I'm so glad I have some of that 80s stuff still in my closet. Yeah, shoulder pads and high hair. That was another thing. Like, the more you teased your hair, the more Aquanet that you used, and the higher your shoulder pads. If you looked like a linebacker and your hair was 6 feet high, you were hot. So, these are bad fashion trends is what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. This all started because they are now on the internet offering a CVS, a receipt that looks like a CVS scarf, which is a very weird thing. So we were talking about weird, ridiculous, and stupid fashion trends. 312-981-7200 if you want to text us. 847, no, this is Laura in Mundelein, said 70s I wore gaucho pants with knee socks and clogs. In the 80s I wore stirrup pants. Oh, the stirrup pants. Oh, the stirrup pants. I used to like the stirrup pants on the ladies.
Stirrup pants? What's a stirrup pant?
you know how baseball players would wear stirrups to hold their socks up? They would go into the shoe, like the, you know what I'm talking about? The stirrup would go into the shoe. There were pants like that that women wore in the 80s. 708 says, golf visors were terrible, doubly if they were worn upside down or backwards. Yeah, that's not a good look. Oh, man. Here's Lulu on WGN. Hi, Lulu.
Hey, how are you, Nick?
All right, go ahead.
I wasn't totally off the chain. I wore tights and leotards to jazzercise, but I did have my hair permed pretty much through the late 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
When you're talking about big hair.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I just cringe when I think about it are dark, stonewashed jeans.
Yeah. Boy, they were big,
those
too.
Those were horrible.
And they were big. Yeah, those were popular.
They were, but every time I think of that I wore them, I think, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What were people thinking?
Yeah. Now, I can't tell you the number of times I've gone back, and thought about, the kind of clothes and the kind of hair that I had over the years, and, like, oh, my God. That's why, like, in the late 80s, I started letting my hair grow out. And so by the time grunge hit, I was fashionable because I had really long hair. Yeah, so, all right, Lulu, thanks.
All right, thanks.
Yep. Yeah, no, seriously, I just didn't care anymore. I was like, I'm not getting haircuts, so I let my hair grow, like, all the way down to, like, the middle of my back at one point. And I wore flannels, and I wore jeans, and suddenly everybody was doing that. I'm not saying I was a fashion plate. I just said I just decided I didn't give a damn what I looked like anymore, and that seemed to be the style. You know? Oh, man. All right, here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick. There's a lot of things back in the late 60s, real early 70s that I wore that I cringe now if my grandkids seen them, you know?
Yeah.
My mom worked at a bowling alley, and I kind of was learning how to work on the machines, and so the beer distributors would always give you, like, dress shirts, button-up shirts that had all their beer labels all over them. So I had Schlitz shirts, Budweiser shirts,
yeah,
bell bottoms with Budweiser labels on them, and then the hair perms for guys to give them afros for white guys,
right.
And then the rat tail comb.
Sticking out
the rat that hung out of your back pocket.
That was big in high school for me. That was a big thing. You feathered your hair back. You wore your jeans, and you had the comb sticking out of your back pocket. That was a huge look in high school. Everybody had a comb sticking out of their back pocket. So,
and then another thing was like the stocking cap, like Bronson wore in Here Comes Bronson on the motorcycle.
Yeah. True. All right, Rich, I got to run.
Stocking cap in the middle. All right.
Take care.
Have a good day.
All right,
bye.
Take care. 312-981-7200. We want to hear from you. Bad fashion. Were you a victim? Seriously, I do want to hear from you about your thoughts on this stupid CVS receipt scarf. That's how this whole talk started, and it will continue. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio continuing here on a Wednesday morning here until 4 a.m. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 as we continue the show. And we continue Wildcard Wednesday. That's when every morning, you program our music bumps that we hear coming back from commercials and news. And today's theme is Wildcard Wednesday, which means any artist, any song, anything. Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah.
Who requested the PM Dawn?
That is coming to us from Kathy.
Nice.
Cover of Norwegian Wood.
Yeah.
Who's PM Dawn?
Oh, my God.
You're going to have to explain it. I don't know.
Oh.
It's a cool song. It's a cool cover.
PM Dawn is one of my favorite hip-hop artists in the history of hip-hop. Have you not heard Set Adrift on Memory Bliss?
It's not ringing a bell.
Just look it up. PM Dawn, one of my favorite artists ever, and Prince B, the really big MC of PM Dawn, passed away. Do you know the song "I Die Without You"? The ballad "I Die Without You" from the Eddie Murphy movie Boomerang.
No.
Oh man. See if you recognize "Set Adrift" by Memory.
Well, let's try this.
Sample "True" by Spandau Ballet.
That I know.
Yeah,
I've never heard that.
Dude, you gotta.
I've definitely never listened to PM Dawn.
You've got to get into PM Dawn. They're transcendent. I'm not kidding. And "I Die Without You" is one of my favorite hip hop ballads of all time. It's a beautiful song. The thing about those guys is that they were obviously influenced by psychedelia, without question. They did great sample work. He had a beautiful voice for hip hop, and their songs were lush. Like, their production was spectacular. No, I'm a ridiculous PM Dawn fan. They're great. PM Dawn, early 90s. So, all right. Hey, we're talking about fashion. Also, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, as we continue the Nick DiGilio show here. So fashion, that's what we're chatting about here. It all started because there's an item available on Etsy that you can buy, and it is a scarf that looks like one of those ridiculously long CVS scarves. And it's yet another sort of fashion piece that might seem weird or crazy, but there's been tons of weird, crazy, stupid, and dumb fashion trends over the years, and that's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200 if you want to join us for talk and text. Sherry is on WGN. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. What's up?
Good. I'm calling because I wanted to make a comment on that CVS scarf. I think it sounds totally ridiculous, but believe it or not, I think someone's going to try to get a refund on one of them one of these days. It'll probably be in your dumb criminal series. But what I'm getting at is I'm 57 years old, and I have two sisters, and when we were in grade school, we tried everything that was new. And I was wondering if you remember the wet look coat, the bubble umbrella, and the ridiculous windowpane blue jean pants.
Yes, I do. I do. The bubble umbrellas, people still have the bubble umbrellas. There are people still walking around with the bubble umbrellas. I know it was something that became popular in the 70s, but people still walk around with those bubble umbrellas. So, yeah. You know, the pants. There's a really great, this really hilarious comedy. Andrew Bergman wrote and directed, who is one of the best comedic writers and a terrific director. Andrew Bergman's made some really, really great movies. He made a movie called So Fine, in which Ryan O'Neal sort of became a because it was during the designer jeans phase of the 80s when this movie came out. And so he inadvertently creates a pair of jeans that become a sensation by, like, ripping the back of the jeans, and then they put in clear plastic pockets so you can see butts. And it becomes this huge, you know, this huge fashion trend in this movie, So Fine. And then it became an actual thing, like women having their butts hanging out of the back of their pants. But that's a funny movie. If you've never seen So Fine, that's a funny, especially Jack Warden. Jack Warden plays his dad in it. And he's got one of my favorite lines ever in it. It's a very funny movie. It's called So Fine. And that's about designer jeans, like what we're talking about, and how ridiculous they got. Ripping out the butt of the designer jean, and then that becomes the thing.
Scary. Scary thought.
Steve says platform shoes for men, unless, of course, you had goldfish swimming around in the heels, then you got a pass. Yeah, the goldfish swimming around in the big platform shoes. Always reminds me of I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. Always. When Antonio Fargas gets released from jail and he's got all of his garb that he wore in the '70s, including his platform shoes with the goldfish in them. then they break and there's water and goldfish falling out all over the place. So 807, 60s Nero shirts, 70s leisure suits, 80s there was the workout clothes. There was a show in the '80s called 20-Minute Workout. Very popular with guys watching the whole 20 minutes. It's Canadian, Bill. It's true. 20-Minute Workout. It was on all the time. People watched it. Guys didn't exercise during it. You were supposed to work out with the 20 minutes. You know, they were coaching you as you were watching it. Nobody, guys who watched it, on the couch going, yeah.
I'm sure they were working something out.
Yeah. Who wore the jacket and T-shirt better, Sonny Crockett or Jed Clampett? I got to go with Jed Clampett.
I'm gonna say Sonny.
See, now to me, that was, again, 80s. That was an 80s. That was an unfortunate look. The whole Miami Vice thing, the T-shirt, the white suit, and no socks was a very unfortunate look.
Is it bad that I kind of wish I had gotten to live through that? I would have loved to be going for the
I'm not saying it wasn't fun.
The white suit.
I'm not saying it wasn't fun, because it was. I mean, to live through that. But you look back on it, you're like, do you realize how stupid you look? And then the whole 5 o'clock shadow thing along with that, because Don Johnson always had the 5 o'clock shadow.
Well, he had to look like he hadn't slept the night before. Didn't have time to shave. He was partying. Like,
and that was George Michael, too. George Michael had the little, 5 o'clock shadow thing.
Almost like painted on. It was like so perfect.
Yeah. But that was the thing, man. You got the 5 o'clock shadow. You got the Don Johnson, Sonny Crockett wardrobe. No socks. White shoes. Hang out with a guy named Tubbs. That was another thing. You know, if you lived through that, that's another thing that did change the culture. Miami Vice changed the culture.
Well, yeah, it was like MTV Cops.
Well, that was the pitch that Michael Mann had.
Genius.
Michael Mann walked in to NBC and he said, MTV Cops.
They're like, here's $1 million.
Yeah, go. So, all right. All right, we're going to continue here, and the news is coming up.
Bella c'è la luna, brilla strette, strette come butto, belle fasteggia, sotto celle de Roma.
All right. It's Nick DiGilio, continuing on through the morning, here till 4 a.m., as we are every weeknight into the weekday, into the week morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., and the show continues, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Hill Street Blues, because it premiered on this date in 1981 and became an instant sensation, a groundbreaker, and was considered one of the best police dramas of all time. So we're going to talk about that, and the best cop dramas ever. And we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on the best cop TV shows of all time? 312-981-7200 for text and talk. Hey, we're going to have a little episode of Know Your Onion. That'll be after 3:30. Tom will be your host, Tom Hush, who's my producer, and I'm Nick DiGilio, here every weekday night morning. And Know Your Onion is when Tom reads you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or it's from The Onion. And The Onion being a satirical fake newspaper that's written in as a comedy. But sometimes, because the news, the real news, the news that we actually report on in the real world, is so weird and so crazy right now that it's very difficult to tell between a real news headline and an Onion headline. But if you can, you will win. You call in. If you're one of the first two contestants to get in here, you'll play a round where you have to name whether you think it's a real headline or an Onion headline. And that's 312-981-7200 coming up later. Also, a very exciting Blackhawks Express to play from last night's game. They needed that win. They got it. And they came back. It was a very exciting game. And they came back from behind for an OT victory. And we will hear the Blackhawks Express. those are some of the things that coming up as we continue on the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN. Now, though, we're talking about fashions, and we continue to talk about it, and I want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. So we continue to talk about fashion because of the CVS scarf nuttiness. And it's Wild Card Wednesday continues as well. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? You program the music bumps every single morning on this show, and it's Wild Card Wednesday today. And who requested the Dino?
So that is coming to us all the way from James V.
Thank you, James V. Little Dean. So we got some texts coming in, and I want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. 773 area code says, I'm in Northwest Sider, and I went to Taft High School, and my wardrobe was jeans and my black loop shirt I wore all the time, and yes, I hung out with the stoners. I was approached by the producers of MTV to be the first MTV weather girl, and one of the things they said was I couldn't wear my loop t-shirt, my loop black t-shirt. They said I wore that shirt. I said, I guess that was the sexiest way of saying that I had a good rack, and they offered me the job. 269 area code, or Buddy, actually. Buddy says, bad fashion. Look at everything we're wearing now. In 20 years, that will be bad fashion. Hey, I'm wearing a black shirt and a pair of jeans and Converse Chucks, All-Stars. That's not going to be considered bad fashion in 20 years because it's universal. I decided to stop trying to be any kind of fashion related person in the late 80s. So, I do have here an article from Who What Wear, WEAR.com. Who What Wear, EAR. Both influential fashion trends, and they go decade by decade. 312-981-7200. What are some of the fashion mistakes or some of the weirdest fashion trends that you remember that maybe you were a part of that you experienced? Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, in 1982, we graduated, and a buddy of ours, this is a matter of 5-6 days, we're supposed to go out that next weekend. Well, we're standing there in our jeans and T-shirts and, flannel shirts, whatever. He shows up in an Izod with a sweater over his shoulders and boat shoes.
Ah, yes. Yes.
It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, that was a look in the early 80s. That was definitely a look. You had the sweater wrapped around your shoulders with the sleeves, and then you had the boat shoes and the alligator. You had the alligator shirt.
It wasn't fashionable to us.
Yeah, no, not at all. Okay, thanks, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely a big look in the 80s. I don't quite understand why it was such a big look, but it was. So, okay. 312-981-7200. If you would like to text us or call us, the most influential fashion trends is what we're talking about. Let's see. In the course of history, 100 years isn't a particularly long time, but in the course of fashion history, it's the difference between trying to get around in a bone-cinching girdle, an ankle-length skirt, and easing into the Nike leggings and Van sneakers you're probably wearing today. There have been major shifts in technology, politics, culture, and social norms, and fashion has reflected the ever-changing cycle of trends over the years. From the sky-high platforms of the 70s to the high-waisted bikinis of the 40s, we see plenty of popular looks of decades past serving as inspiration for designers today. So let's start with the 1900s. The S-bend corset.
Oh, my.
I don't know how women wore these. I have no idea. I mean, they shifted organs. Organs were shifted. You know, even actresses who make period movies where they have to wear corsets, you know, in modern filmmaking, talk about how awful it was, how you can't breathe and your organs are literally being shifted.
Anything for fashion. Fashion is pain,
yeah.
Nick.
I don't know. So the S-bend or health corset is what they called it in the Edwardian period. And it's still not. It's, you know, I mean, you can see these movies where they wear these corsets, and you're like, how do you do that? And then imagine that in real life. How about this? In the 1910s, the hobble skirt. Finally, hemlines crept up to pass the ankle, making walking less of a chore. Unfortunately, this coincided with a trend of hobble skirts, a style popularized by designer Paul Poiret, that was narrow through the ankle and sometimes landed below the knee, constricting women's movements, sometimes leading to injury. While this fad mercifully did not stick around for long, the more practical duster coats and lace-up boots of that era echoed more in fashion today. Man, that crap women have gone through. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, men's fashion really hasn't changed.
But it's not
terribly.
Only that. It's not that men's fashion doesn't shift your organs.
No.
It doesn't constrict you to the point where you can't walk, where you could hurt yourself.
We could get the anti-beer gut going. Corset for men.
Yeah.
By Michael Kors.
The 1920s, that would be the flapper style. Flapper ensembles are instantly recognizable as the look of the 20s, and it's easy to see why, with their relaxed drop weights, waists, ornately beaded designs, and feathered accessories. The trends of that era have an enduring appeal. I think the flapper style is awesome. I think it's awesome. I've always been a fan.
We see a lot of people this year for New Year's Eve did flapper parties, did the night Roaring 20s party.
Because the 20s are coming back. The 20s are here. Hey, by the way, now that pot is legal and that this year, April, the entire month is 420, not just one day, but the entire month is 420, I predict that we will break records on how much weed is blown in the month of April in 2020 because it's 420 the entire month. People celebrate on the day. Mm-hmm. Now you have an entire month because it's 420.
Should be interesting. I bet they are growing right now.
And I'm telling you, it's going to be a month long party blowing weed. I'm telling you, this is the first time an entire month will be 420. So
it's a brave new world.
It is. It's beautiful. All right, we're continuing on. We've got more fashion to talk about. And then we're going to talk about cop shows a little bit later on, and we want to hear from you. Hill Street Blues celebrating its anniversary, and that's going to get us onto the topic of cop shows as we continue. But flapper style and other fashions continue. 312-981-7200. Early morning, stay safe and stay connected with Morgan Kolkmeyer's weather forecast and Sarah Jindra's traffic reports. Weekdays 4 to 6 on WGN-TV Morning News. Morgan had her baby. She's off on maternity leave. So she's not going to be on. So, okay. Yeah. So we'll continue after this.
It's about time. It's about space. About two men in the strangest place. It's about time. It's about flight. Traveling faster than the speed of light. Here is their tale of the brave crew. As through the barrier of time they flew. Past the fighting Minutemen.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN as the show continues with Wildcard Wednesday.
Jimmy Wilker Wednesday.
You pick the bumps. Today it's any artist, any song, anything. You know who knows the lyrics to that song and sings it well?
Your dad?
Nope. Mr. Dave Innit.
Really?
Yep.
Dave loves the It's About Time theme?
Yep. Used to watch the show. Because this TV show is ridiculous, by the way. It's about astronauts who end up hanging out with cavemen and who requested that? It wasn't Dave, was it?
No, that's coming to us from Big Ed.
Big Ed.
I'd love if it were Dave. That'd be pretty
We were fun. Talking about it one morning when Dave came in, and he sang it. He sang the theme because I guess he used to watch the show when he was young, and the show is called It's About Time. And it's a ridiculous time travel show about, I guess it was a couple of astronauts who passed through a time, you know, space portal and ended up hanging out with cavemen. And Dave used to watch it. and knew the theme.
You know, he's always been a little bit of a mystery to me.
Who, Dave Bennett?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very enigmatic. Oh, I yeah. like that about him. Oh, but wow. I always see him, I'm like, man, I wonder if he, you know, I just know him as Dave Bennett, sportscaster extraordinaire.
Yeah.
But I was like,
oh, he's much more than that.
He's a fan of It's About Time.
It's a fan of It's About Time. But more importantly, knows the lyrics to the damn theme.
Do you think he would be upset if later I asked him to sing it?
No. No, he did it on the show.
I know, but you know,
what, just walk up to him in the sports office and go, "Hey Dave, sing it's about time theme."
Pull my phone.
Well, he's not, I don't think he's going to be in.
Oh yeah, no.
At Northwestern game last night.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to be in this morning. So. All right. Hi. I would love you to call us up or to text us with your thoughts on some bad fashion trends or things that maybe you wore or were a part of. CVS, you can get yourself a scarf that looks like a CVS, long CVS receipt. And we found that to be absolutely ridiculous and thought we'd talk about some other ridiculous or crazy fashion trends. So now we're going decade by decade. 1930s, bias cut gowns. While the American public was reeling from the Great Depression, the silver screen became a welcome sight of escapism. There, film icons like Betty Davis, Jean Harlow, and Joan Crawford dazzled in glamorous gowns and tailored skirt suits. The silhouette was long and lean, in part thanks to the popularization of Madeline Vonnet's bias cut, a technique that allows fabric to drape over the body. Good look. In the 30s. Yeah. Now, you go back and you look at that time period of Hollywood, and that was when glamour really kicked in. Like, really, really became, like, a huge thing in the 30s.
Which is weird, because that's the time of the Depression. That's Depression.
Well, I think that's the reason why. People wanted people didn't want to see, didn't want real life. They wanted to look at these bigger than stars, glamorous people. And this unbelievable future that maybe we have, we'll get out of this depression, and maybe I can look like that.
It was Mae West the 30s?
Yes.
Yeah. Imagine that, getting to look at Mae West and be like, yeah, life might not be
long,
so bad.
I mean, she lasted longer through the 30s.
Obviously. That's true. She's a legend. But.
Yeah. 1940s, the bikini. One of the less predictable consequences of wartime was the increasing popularity of the two-piece swimsuit, a result of fabric rationing enforced by the U.S. government beginning in 1943. 3 years later, French designer Louis Riard introduced the bikini we know today, naming it after the style of nuclear tests and daring it to cut below the belly button, a style that wouldn't be fully embraced until decades later. In spring of 2017, they relaunched with a collection of luxurious modern bikinis and one-pieces. So, it was fabric rationing that became the bikini because of fabric rationing?
An unintended effect.
Yeah.
The single greatest swimsuit ever invented.
Yeah. All right, the 50s, the new look. In 1947, Christian Dior debuted the new look silhouette that would shape the decade to come. With its nipped-in waist, structured bust, and voluptuous taffeta-layered skirt, it was the antithesis of wartime outfits. Even the lighter garments that eventually became common fare among middle-class women stateside retained much of this femininity, cinch-waist dresses, full mid-calf skirts, and sweater sets. Yeah, those were good looks. The 60s, miniskirt. Oh, man. I remember the miniskirt. Hemlines crept ever northward in the 60s, and ground zero for the shift was designer Mary Quant's London boutique, The Bazaar. If I didn't make them short enough, the Chelsea girls who had wonderful legs would get out the scissors and just shorten the skirts themselves, she later told the New York Times. At the time, they were controversial, but clearly the naysayers were ultimately overpowered. Additionally, Two of the most popular hues of the space age were appropriately white and silver. Two color trends that the result of advancement in fabric technology. So there you go. The miniskirt. I'm surprised hot pants aren't listed on here.
Hot pants?
Yeah.
Are those just, what, those just really short shorts?
Really short, really tight pants.
Yee.
70s. That's a 70s thing. Hot pants.
Did you rock the hot pants?
No, I didn't rock the hot pants. Women rock the hot pants.
I'm sure, like, it was a big thing
in the 70s, early 70s, the hot pants movement. I guess I think if you, hey, listen, James Brown has a song called Hot Pants.
Yeah.
It's based on that. It's based on that trend. Yeah. Hot pants was a big, I'm actually surprised it wasn't mentioned here. So, and for the 70s, they mentioned platform heels. Jeans got wider, heels got taller, and synthetic fabrics flooded fashion stores during the 70s in New York, which had your Studio 54. The Dwelling Cool Girls brought disco trends like halter tops and palazzo pants to the mainstream. While the other side of the Atlantic, especially the punk scene, thrived, with Malcolm McLaren in tattered T-shirts and Vivian Westwood with safety-pinned plaid. Yeah. No mention of hot pants.
Missing out. Really missing out.
Number, in the 80s, it's leggings. There's one item along with ubiquitous in the 80s and today, and that's leggings. Alongside the aerobics craze of the decade, spandex became a bona fide trend, though back then, they were worn with leg warmers, off-the-shoulder sweatshirts, and or scrunchies. For more professionally minded women, the broad-shouldered power suit became an office staple, and for good reason. Okay. 90s. Minimalism. Is that what they're calling it? The youth-oriented culture of the Smells Like Teen Spirit decade was fertile ground for grunge to take hold, and it did. Following Marc Jacobs' groundbreaking SS93 collection for Perry Ellis and the Vogue spread that followed, teens and 20-somethings embraced baggy flannels, floral prints, and still today snap them up in vintage stores. Elsewhere, minimalism became big news in fashion with slip dresses, sheer fabrics, and a palette of gray, black, and white ruling runways. Finally, hip-hop influence extended to the mainstream. When MTV's generation was copying the looks of Aaliyah, TLC, and Salt-N-Pepa. How about 2000s? The tracksuit.
Wait, what?
Yes, the decade of the tracksuit, beloved by the likes of J-Lo. Don't you remember people walking around with tracksuits on? Yeah. Early to mid-aughts?
Oh, man.
Juicy Couture?
Okay, yeah, that, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. And then the 2010s, athleisure. With 9 years of the decade behind us, we feel safe in our predictions which trends will endure the most. Skinny jeans came into their own this decade after gradually making their way into the mainstream, and despite endless articles heralding their death, it's not likely to be going anywhere anytime soon. Same for athleisure, and to a smaller extent, its cousin, normcore. Now that they've experienced the joys of walking around in sneakers, tees, and hoodies all day while still looking stylish, who would want to go back? That's what they're calling it, huh? Normcore?
Yeah, normcore. Not trying to look like anything but normal.
They come up with a term for anything, won't they?
Hey, man. That's where you got post-punk, post-post-punk, post-punk revival. We'll come up with a name for anything.
Okay. All right. Well, there it is. Fashion, everyone. I'm a fashion staple with my jeans and my shirt and my shoes.
Hey, man, the waffle knit thermal, it's a classic look.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere.
So Hill Street Blues turns 39 years old today. It was a groundbreaking TV show, changed how we watched cop shows. Did you watch Hill Street Blues back in the day? Where does it rank in your favorite shows? We're going to run down some of the best cop shows right here on the Nick DiGilio Show, and that is coming up next. Can't wait.
I can't wait.
Yeah. We're continuing here. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, and we're here until 4 a.m. And coming up, we have another round of Know Your Onion. You call in, and you become a contestant, and Tom will read newspaper headlines, and you have to decide whether or not it is real or from The Onion and win prizes. We have Blackhawks Express coming up, too, from last night's very exciting overtime win. 312-981-7200 as we continue Wildcard Wednesday.
Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday.
That would be any artist, any song, anything, your call. Who requested the Mats?
That's coming to us from the 630. Well, can't hardly wait.
A little great choice replacements. All right. As Wildcard Wednesday continues. So Hill Street Blues. Today, the date being January 15th, marks the anniversary of the debut of Hill Street Blues. 1981 it debuted. It was a cultural phenomenon. It was huge. And everybody was watching it. And it was groundbreaking in terms of the style and in terms of how they handled it. Because, you know, there have been cop shows all over the place, but up until that point, it was really silly stuff like Starsky and Hutch that wasn't handled in any kind of realistic manner. A majority, but not all, a majority of police television shows were really over the top and silly and not realistic and didn't handle things the way that they really did in the world of police work. And Hill Street Blues was one of those. It was a landmark cops and drummers robbers drama. It debuted on NBC. When the series first appeared, the police show had largely been given up for dead. Critics savaged stodgy and moralistic melodramas and scoffed at lighter fare like Starsky and Hutch. Created by Stephen Bochco and Michael Kozel, Hill Street Blues invigorated television, paving the way for more realistic and gritty fare. Hill Street Blues was set in an anonymous northern city. The exteriors were actually filmed in Chicago, and was the first real attempt by television to portray police officers as fallible human beings. Each episode began with the 7 a.m. roll call, led by Sergeant Esterhaus. He closed the roll call with his trademark refrain, "Let's be careful out there." The series not only changed the way that Americans viewed police officers, it also revolutionized television drama itself. The show resisted formula and introduced the ensemble cast. Whereas early cop shows like Dragnet and Adam 12 were centered around a couple of officers who always get their man by the end of the hour. The full squad house of regulars on Hill Street Blues rarely resolved cases in one episode. Hill Street Blues was acclaimed through its entire run. When it ended in May of 1987, it set records for most Emmys won in a single season and most nominations in one year. Yeah, I don't if you weren't around during that time period, it felt revolutionary. Like that show felt unlike anything that was on TV, especially the kind of cop shows that we had seen in years earlier. And it became a sensation. Like everybody was watching it, and it's responsible for one other cop show that got canceled too soon. In the infinite wisdom of ABC, they decided to put Police Squad up against Hill Street Blues. So this weird comedy series that doesn't have a laugh track and is filled with dense jokes, both visual and, you know, audio, with, you know, Leslie Nielsen. And this was right after the success of Airplane. And it didn't work, and it got canceled, and it was one of the most brilliant shows ever. But ABC's fantastic wisdom, let's put it up against Hill Street Blues. Dumb. So Hill Street Blues, it's celebrating its anniversary today, and so we thought we'd talk about the cop show. That's what we want to hear from you. I got some of the greatest cop shows of all time here. Paste Magazine put together an article and listed some of the greatest cop shows ever. And we want to hear from you. There are a ton of them. And I'm sure that you have your favorites. So what were your favorite cop shows? And even if you want to get into the ridiculous element of cop shows, which ones were ridiculous, but some of the most memorable cop shows of all time. And there are a ton. So 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Text us if you want. Call us. We want to hear from you. The 40 greatest cop shows of all time got practically every writer at Paste Magazine fired up and ready to go to defend the honor of their personal favorite. So we've got we've excluded shows about PIs. So no Rockford Files, no Veronica Mars, no Number One Ladies Detective Agency. So get ready to overload your Netflix queue. Here are some of the greatest cop shows of all time. Now, here's one from Noah Hawley, who created Fargo. And it's called The Unusuals. Before he found himself elevated to the upper echelons of TV royalty with the Fargo TV series, showrunner Noah Hawley spent years cutting his teeth in network TV trenches. Perhaps his most notable contribution, which demonstrated his talent for crafting well-defined, if idiosyncratic, characters, was the quirky one-season police dramedy, The Unusuals. The show centers on Amber Tamblyn's Casey Schrager, a by-the-book, somewhat naive young cop who was transferred to the NYPD's notorious Second Precinct to help reform the station and its tainted reputation. This naturally proves to be easier said than done, considering the sheer neuroses on display, including one detective who is suffering from a brain tumor that induces hallucinations at inappropriate times. Pitched as a, quote, modern-day MASH, the show boasts the same unorthodox mix of grounded realism and absurdist comedy. It's a fresh, funny, compelling take on the police drama. The Unusual's inability to garner a second season proved to be a classic case of wrong place, wrong time. I do not remember that. I do not remember that at all. The Unusuals. And I like Amber Tamblyn. I think Amber Tamblyn's great. How about Naked City? Originally ran from 1958 to 1963. Based on the celebrated 1948 movie of the same name, Naked City sought to introduce a still young TV audience to the idea that quality crime stories could be enjoyed in the comfort of their own living room. Filmed on location in various areas of New York City, the adventures of NYPD's 65th Precinct boasts a lived-in, noir-esque atmosphere that still manages to hold up even after 50 years of imitators. From the series, and though the series featured no shortage of established thespians of stage and screen, like Lee J. Cobb, Martin Balsam, Hume Cronin, it also made room for quite a few young bucks, including Dustin Hoffman, Dennis Hopper, Christopher Walken, and Robert Duvall. Part of the fun of watching the show today is catching the early work of these actors who would soon become legends in their own right. That's one of my favorite things to do when I watch an old TV series, you know, on antenna TV, is pointing out the guest stars. Like, suddenly Dennis Hopper shows up and you're like, hey, that's Dennis Hopper. He looks like he's 16. That's one of the fun things about watching all those classic old reruns. Cop shows is the topic. 312-981-7200 on this, the anniversary of the first episode of Hill Street Blues. What are some of the best cop shows? Ron is on WGN. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, Nick. Nick, there's a couple of them here. The one with Lee Marvin where it was set in Chicago, I can't remember the name. You recall that one?
I do not remember the name.
Okay, somebody will bring it up. But another great one was Highway Patrol, which is still on today. Right after your show, it comes on TV. But if you look at Highway Patrol, you'll see that grittiness, number one. Number two, I'm sure it's shot in California, and when they show it, you're driving through California, and there's nothing built up. Then if you go to Adam 12, everything in California is built
up. Yeah, that's true.
But and also one more thing about Broderick Crawford and a Highway Patrol, you know, he's like that the ugly cop, you know, the fat cop. But the cop was always there, and they love to shoot people in that show. Everybody gets shot, you know, in Highway Patrol. It's real. For that period of time when you're a little kid, you know, it's realistic. And to see it again today, and you know, you point out, can I completely change the subject just a little bit, Nick? Something that really pisses me off Everything today, every commercial, radio or TV, they've got this here lousy, it's not even music, it's noise. You know, if it's old people they're selling stuff to, maybe they'll start it with like funeral music, and then it'll get happy if you buy the insurance. Yeah. Have you noticed that, Nick?
Yeah, I have. I have.
It just makes me.
Ron, okay. That's a completely different topic. By the way, the show that Ron was talking about with Lee Marvin is called M Squad, which is a pretty classic show. M Squad. So, Ron, thanks for the call. Try to stay on topic. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking about some of the best cop shows ever, and we would love to hear from you. So, Happy Valley is. Started in 2014, and it's still running. It's available on Netflix. It was with dismay that I received the news from Shannon, compiler of this list, that nobody else picked Happy Valley. It's inexcusable, and the only explanation is that nobody's seen it, but it's on the sophomore season. There's only been one season so far, and the show centers on a kidnapping in the down at the heels English town of West Yorkshire. So a British one. Never saw that one either. So, all right. Why don't we're going to continue here with talking about best cop shows. And there's so many to choose from, so many different eras. And so we are going to continue that. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Text us or talk to us. And it is the anniversary of Hill Street Blues, and on into that. We're jumping in on the topic of best cop shows, most memorable, and some of your favorites at 312-981-7200. And we continue on this Wednesday morning. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush is my producer. Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. And we're here every weeknight into the weekday morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And so we have Wildcard Wednesday every Wednesday, and that's Wildcard Wednesday. You guys program all the music that we hear in the morning, and you choose it. So, who chose the Cheers theme?
That's coming to us from Marissa.
Marissa wanted to hear a little Cheers. Okay, classic TV show. And you know, right around that time, also appearing on that same network would be Hill Street Blues. Hill Street Blues was a classic television show, made its debut on this date in 1981 and became a cultural phenomenon and critically acclaimed. It kind of changed the face of television, especially the cop show at that time. And that inspired us to talk about some of the best cop shows of all time. And there are a ton to choose from. It's one of the most popular and ubiquitous genres in television history. So there's always been cop shows. There always will be cop shows. Some are better than others. Some are terrible. Some are great. And we're talking about some of your favorites and what are the best cop shows. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hey, Nick. Jack Webb, Harry Morgan, Dragnet.
Yeah, classic.
The thing that is kind of funny about that show, I still watch the old reruns, and they use the same set of actors and actresses for all the episodes. In one episode, one guy might play a thug or a robber, and then several episodes later, you could see the exact same actor playing a district attorney or even a judge.
Yeah.
And it was really, I mean, they were really good actors because they had such a wide range.
Well, they did that. They did that a lot back, you know, in the early days. I mean, you know, if you look at the Honeymooners, Jackie Gleason had a company of actors that he used all the time, and they played several different roles in different episodes of the Honeymooners.
I'm thinking of an episode when Jack Webb and Harry Morgan, they go into an inner city school in L.A. and they're trying to recruit some guys who are, you know, not going to school. They're trying to recruit them for the police academy so they would help to make a difference in their community. And one of the guys in the group was O.J. Simpson.
Mm.
And he was still a student at UCLA. And it's funny, he's got a really short sideball haircut. And, yeah. you know, they're trying to, like, because there's a lot of protests, and they're trying to get them to believe in the police because, you know, there's a lot of anti-police feeling there. And,
right,
you
right.
know, in the late 60s. But yeah. it was great time. And, you know, they go to people's houses and arrest them because they heard they were smoking marijuana. And
right.
It's great. I love it. Okay.
All right, David, thanks. Yeah. And also, you know, as we mentioned before, watching the great old TV shows and spotting those, like spotting O.J. Simpson on an episode of Dragnet. How cool would that be to be like, is that O.J.? So. Yeah, that's one of the fun parts of watching the old TV shows.
Well, that's one thing that has aged interestingly.
Yeah. Yeah. 847 text, and we want to hear from you. Send us a text, 312-981-7200. My vote for best cop show ever is The Commish. Yeah, with Vic Mackey. Why am I blanking on his name? Michael Chiklis. I'm sure that'll come up. I'm sure The Shield will come up in this conversation as we continue. 847, bring back Cop Rock. It was so bizarre that it was good. No, it wasn't good. Bizarre, yes. Terrible, yes. Good, no. Jay says, hi, Nick, the FBI with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. I think they're sticking strictly to police procedurals or things like that. 309, I love cop shows from the 70s. They were the best. My favorite cop show ever is The Streets of San Francisco with Carl Malden and Michael Douglas. That was a classic. That's where Michael Douglas got his big break. It was on Streets of San Francisco.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's weird to think they needed a break.
Well, yeah.
His dad's Kirk Douglas.
His dad's Kirk Douglas. And but, you know, I mean, that's another thing, though. That's got to be a little bit difficult, too, if you're in the shadow of what is considered one of the greatest actors of all time.
True.
And, when you have that kind of thing, you want to prove to everyone that you can do it yourself, as opposed to this isn't nepotism. You know, I didn't get this part because my dad's Kirk Douglas. I got this part because I'm a good actor and I'm capable. And I think there's a pressure there for you know, the offspring of really famous actors and actresses. 224 area code says, hey, Columbo was awesome, and I also enjoyed Miami Vice. JB said, did Brooklyn Nine-Nine make the list? I don't know yet, but it should. I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I love that show. I think it's hilarious. 847, Barney Miller and the Andy Griffith Show. We are talking about the best cop shows. It's Nick DiGilio here. Tom Hush is producing, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. It is the anniversary of the first airing of Hill Street Blues, so I busted out this this article listing some of the best cop shows of all time, according to Pace Magazine. Streets of San Francisco is the next one that's mentioned here, which was a really cool show. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. More texts coming in. Cop Chris said The Shield was by far the best. I knew that was going to come up. The Shield was by far the best cop TV show I've ever watched. 847, Miami Vice and the original Hawaii Five-O. People love the new one, though. The reboot of Hawaii Five-O on CBS right now, I think it's on like its fifth or sixth season. And the ratings are really high. It gets nice notices. I think people really like the reboot of Hawaii Five-O. 708, I think Beretta was a great cop show. I loved Beretta. Loved it. Watched it all the time. Canadian Bill chimes in with his text to 312-981-7200. One of my favorite cop shows was Law and Order Criminal Intent. Vincent D'Onofrio really showed the workings of a police profiler and, of course, Police Squad. Let's say you went to the racetrack, quote, and they look into the camera and say, you went to the racetrack. still my favorite line, one of my favorite lines in comedy history is in an episode of Police Squad. So Leslie Nielsen, Frank Drebin, goes undercover and pretends to be a locksmith. He opens up a locksmith shop to bust these mafioso guys who are coming in and shaking down the businesses in the building, in the area. So the big mafioso boss is sitting in his office, and the door opens up, and it's Leslie Nielsen, and he walks in. Who are you, and how did you get in here? And he goes, I'm a locksmith, and I'm the locksmith. It's one of my favorite lines. It's truly one of my favorite lines of all time.
I'm a locksmith, and
I'm the locksmith. Is that great?
It's so simple. It's effective.
But it's genius, man. I mean, the Zucker, Abram Zucker, those guys. And especially Police Squad. I mean, I'm a Police Squad top secret guy. That's my favorite stuff that they've done. All right. We got the news coming up next as we continue. More cop show talk, too, at 312-981-7200.
I always heard that his herb was top shelf. And Lord, I just could not wait to find out for myself.
Well, don't knock it till you tried it. And I've tried it, my friend. I'll never smoke weed with Willie again.
Yeah, we're continuing here in the Nick DiGilio Show till 4 a.m., and we would love to hear from you, 312-981-7200, as we talk about the best cop shows of all time. Hill Street Blues debuted on this date in 1981, and that got us thinking about some of the best cop shows. And we, of course, want your opinion at 312-981-7200. Coming up at 3:30, we're going to play a round of Know Your Onion. You call in, you become a contestant. Tom reads some news headlines to you, and you guess whether they're real or from The Onion. And that's how it works. And we have a Blackhawks Express from last night's very exciting overtime win to play back. And more texts from you to talk about. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And it is Wildcard Wednesday.
Yay, Wildcard Wednesday.
You program all the music we hear every single morning on this show. There's a different theme every day, and today is Wildcard Wednesday. That means you can request any song, any artist, anything. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from our pal Trucker Rich.
Trucker Rich.
Weed with Willie by Toby Keith.
Yes, Toby Keith. So there it is. We are talking about cop shows, as I said, and we want to get back to that conversation. Punch people on the line here, and talking about, somebody asked if Brooklyn Nine-Nine is mentioned in this article and on the list. Number 12.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
yeah, that's a great show. So, all right, phone lines are lit up here. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. There's Patrick on WGN. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, I didn't know. I kind of got on late, so I didn't know if you already went through the list. But did Suzanne Summers' show, She's the Sheriff, make the list?
No.
I'm a huge fan of The Shield, though. I was blown away when I first saw that. And I still go back and see reruns, and just every episode, it's like I'm almost out of breath at the end of it.
Yeah, no, it's a great show, and Vic Mackey is one of the most memorable TV characters ever, I would say. So, all right, Patrick, thanks, man.
Thanks.
All right, 312-981-7200. Steve is on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Nick, good morning. Yeah, you mentioned Hill Street Blues was a great show, but a little too much art imitating life. When Dominique Dunn was in that episode, I think, like, late 82 season, she played an abuse victim. I think she was an unwed mother, I'm trying to remember. And then a month later, you know, she had bruises on her face in the episode, and that was real-life bruises from her boyfriend who used to beat her up. And then a month later, sure enough, was when he strangled her and killed her. Yeah. So you see her acting in that show in utter fear, first part of the script, but also fearing for her life in real life. So it's a hard watch.
Yeah.
And you met, of course, Jack Webb, you know, the story about him is before they would start filming Zoning Emergency and Adam 12 and, of course, Dragnet, he would get everyone in the room and say, just as a reminder, everyone, this is not a democracy. I'm in charge.
Yeah.
So he was Joe Friday in front of and behind the camera.
Yeah.
And lastly, Streets of San Francisco. Yeah, I used to love that show. Michael Douglas and Carl Malden working so well together with their age difference was, like you said, a testament of what a great actor Michael was. But him and DeVito were currently roommates in New York at that time. And then this is DeVito talking. When he went to do Streets of San Francisco, Danny DeVito said, yeah, every month, even though he didn't live there anymore, he sent his half of the rent. Stand-up guy.
Yeah, that's
so,
good.
Honor among friends is very underrated.
Yeah. Okay,
right, great show
thanks.
As always.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Yeah, they worked together so many times. They were like buddies. They were roommates for a while. You know, Michael Douglas produced One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, gave DeVito that role. They did Romancing the Stone. They did Jewel of the Nile. Danny DeVito directed him in War of the Roses, which is still one of my favorite romantic movies of all time. So we are talking about cop shows here. Because this is the date on which the debut of Hill Street Blues happened. And so we were talking about that and great cop shows. So we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200 as we continue on this Wednesday morning. Here is Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, Cagney and Lacey.
Sure. Yeah.
The reruns are going now. They're still good. Of course, the Blue Bloods. And one program on the Hill Street Blues that I'll never forget, when the one sergeant that did it every morning before their shift and tell them to go out and take care, when he passed away, they had it in the show, and he wanted to be cremated. And he had a request, and the cops said, well, how are we going to do this? They're not going to let us do this. And he really didn't know what they were talking about. Then one morning, early in the morning, they go out and they all get out of their cars. And this shows it's been raining. But what they do is they drop ashes all along the street. It's like on the hill.
Yeah.
And that was him. But the funny thing about it is they leave. And along comes the street sweeper.
Right, exactly. I remember that. I remember that entirely. That was Michael Conrad, by the way, who played the guy who would do the morning roll call, and he did pass away. And he was replaced, if I'm not mistaken, if we can double-check this maybe, Tom Hush, my producer, by the way. He was replaced by Robert Prosky, who was in Thief, who was in Christine. A great character actor. But I think he was replaced by Robert Prosky.
Yeah, it was Robert Prosky.
Yeah.
Replaced Michael Conrad. Tough job.
Yeah.
Tough, big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, Robert Prosky was a great actor.
Wasn't he in Thief?
Yeah, I just said that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was in Thief. He was in Thief. He was also in Christine, and he was fantastic in Christine as the guy who ran the garage.
Yeah,
as the gruffy He's guy.
Not so.
Swearing and. Yeah, no, Prosky was great. Oh, he's in Gremlins 2. He's the late night horror host in Gremlins 2, dressed up like Dracula. Linda, thank you for the call. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Yeah, this is a reasonably priced DVD set. Pretty long run, the Mod Squad.
Oh, yeah. I used to watch that when I was a kid.
Three hippies with a token black,
that's
right?
That's right. Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah, and that was a hip show back then. Hip show. I used to think Michael Cole was the coolest guy. Not from the WWE, but the actor Michael Cole, who was in the show along with Peggy Lipton. Clarence Williams III. Thank you guys for the calls. We're going to continue on here talking about some of the best TV cop shows of all time, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. So we're going to wrap up this conversation about cop shows, so we want to get your thoughts because we are going to move on to Know Your Onion at 3:30. So get in here now with your text or your call at 312-981-7200. Wildcard Wednesday continuing on as we continue on the Nick DiGilio show. I am Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is my producer, Vic Vaughn in the news. We're here every Monday, Sunday night into Monday morning through Thursday night into Friday morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. And we love being here and doing the show for you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we've been discussing some of the best cop TV shows. And some of the most memorable and some of your favorites, because today marks the 39th anniversary of the first episode of Hill Street Blues, which was a relatively revolutionary show that changed cop dramas as we know it. So we're talking about cop dramas, and we got a bunch of texts here at 312-981-7200. And also Wildcard Wednesday is continuing.
Give me Wildcard Wednesday.
You program all the music that we hear as bumps every morning on this show, and the theme today is Wildcard Wednesday, which is any artist, any song, anything. Who requested the Dio Sabbath?
That's coming to us from Steve.
The jam.
Since it got brought up yesterday.
It did. Yeah, Dio era Sabbath. That was Black Sabbath with after Ozzy left, Ronnie James Dio took over, and that's from the album and song, the Heaven and Hell. So... All right, let's get back to this. We got a ton of texts, and then I'll give you the top 10 cop shows of all time, according to Pace Magazine. Let me give you 11 really quickly, though, because 12, as I said, was Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You know what 11 is?
What you got?
Reno 911.
Yes! We did it, everybody. Boy, do I love Reno 911. That was just a weird show.
It was a great show. The only time I ever found Nick Swardson even remotely funny was on that show.
Because he was like the rollerblading guy, right? He was just so nutso.
Yeah. I just don't. I think he is the absolute opposite of funny. I can't stand that guy. But he was funny on that show.
Yeah.
As was everybody. Everybody. Thomas Lennon.
Uh-huh.
So many great comic.
Remarkable on that
comic,
show.
Comic minds were in that show. I do want to mention Police Squad made it to number 21. So I'll give you that list, but let me get some texts here, because I want you to make sure you can share what you want to talk about here in cop shows. 217 area code says, Hill Street Blues was great. I remember when Michael Conrad passed away. Barney Miller was also great, even though it was a comedy drama. Barney Miller, I've talked about this over the years that I've been on the air, and I've been on the air for a really long time. Whenever we talk about cop shows or shows that portray a profession or a job in the most accurate manner, I've had policemen call up and say Barney Miller is one of the most accurate, if not the most accurate, of what it's like to be a detective. Because there's a lot of sitting around, there's a lot of paperwork, there's a lot of nothing happening. So I used to hear that all the time. 708 says, Chips from the 70s with Eric Estrada and Larry Wilcox.
Chips.
Chips, man.
What was that short for again?
California Highway Patrols. Yeah.
Squad,
yeah. Trucker Mark here says, One Adam 12 and Chips. What's with the love for Chips?
Hey, man, people like Chips.
Gabriel in Lincoln Square says, hey, I think Homicide Life on the Street is the best network TV cop show. Andre Brower's Detective Frank Pemberton is one of the greatest characters, and I love that he is now the deadpan character on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I agree with that 100%. Homicide Life on the Street's one of the best cop shows of all time. And one of the best shows in general. Hammer had a huge, and his huge magnum. Hammer. Hey, Nick, how about Angie Dickinson in Police Woman? Yeah, that was a classic show. So, all right. So here are your top 10. You ready for the top 10? These are the top 10 cop shows, according to Paste Magazine. Number 10, NYPD Blue, which was a terrific show. Number 9, Fargo.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah. That show rules.
I love Fargo. I'm just, wow, good for them. Top 10.
Did you see the trailer for the new season?
Yeah.
Shot here in Chicago?
Shot right here.
Chris Rock?
They were shooting on my street.
Yeah, they've been everywhere.
Yeah.
They've been everywhere. But they're turning it into Kansas City in the 50s. That's what that's what it's at.
That's so odd.
8, Luther.
Ah, Stringer Bell.
Stringer Bell, man. Number 7, Law and Order Special Victims Unit. So they went with SVU.
I mean, the best one is The best one's SVU.
No, the original is the best one.
Ah, come on.
No, the early stuff with Michael Moriarty and, you know, why am I blanking on his name? Jerry Orbach.
But come on, Christopher Maloney and... her name?
Mariska Hargitay.
Mariska Hargitay.
Yeah.
I almost said Marcia Gay Harden. I was like, no, that's not it.
You know, it's celebrating its 21st season.
Which is remarkable.
Yeah. Number 6, Homicide: Life on the Street. I think that's a little too low, quite frankly.
With Detective Rodney Munch.
Yeah.
Who would jump over to SVU.
Yep. Number 5, Justified. Wow.
Great Western.
Great, yeah, pretty really high on the list. Number 4, Hill Street Blues, the aforementioned Hill Street Blues. Number 3, True Detective Season 1. They specify
You know, let's be honest here. You have to specify.
And that's about right, number 3 of all time. The first season of True Detective was unbelievable. I mean, it truly was unbelievable. I remember just, like, not being able to wait till I got home to watch it. Because it was so good. And I mean, obviously, you know how we all feel here about Matthew McConaughey. What an unbelievable performance from him and Woody Harrelson. Number 2, The Shield. And then number 1, I don't even think I need to say what it is. the best cop show of all time, because it's also the best TV show of all time. And then, of course, is The Wire, which is absolutely the best cop show ever and, in my opinion, the best TV show ever in the history of the media. And the writer here writes, it's likely going to be a very, very long time before anyone conceives and executes a show as great as The Wire. Until that happens, the HBO series will long be the gold standard for cop dramas, largely due to the fact that it was so much more than a cop drama. Yes, we did see the inner workings of a police department in Baltimore trying desperately to rid their already broken streets of narcotics. And through 5 seasons, David Simon and his talented team of writers and directors tackled the social structures that were keeping the minority population of the city of Baltimore in a constant battle for survival. The plight of the working class, navigating a corrupt business while trying to stay true to their roots, an education system whose sole goal was to push kids through with little concern to their future, and a press that chased awards and circulation increases as opposed to trying to be a voice for the city and its citizens. As they did it while also giving us dozens of memorable characters, even more quotable lines, and offering up a small ray of hope that, as the saying goes, a small group of concerned citizens could, in fact, try to change the world. Yes, Colvin, McNulty, Prez, and Gus tended to fail more than they succeeded, but Simon wants us to applaud their efforts and hopefully inspire us to repair the structures of our society that, as I've seen late, are still crumbling around us. Yeah. Best cop show ever. they do mention in here Life on Mars is mentioned.
I love the British Life on Mars.
The Fall with Gillian Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
Top of the Lake with Elizabeth Moss. 21 Jump Street is mentioned in the article. With Johnny Depp.
So good.
Cracker is mentioned.
What'd you call me?
Yep. And that was a British show. Starsky and Hutch actually got a mention here, even though it was a reasonably silly show. So there you go. All right. Greatest TV cop shows of all time. And our show is continuing, and it's continuing right now with our game here, Know Your Onion. So call right now, 312-981-7200. First two people in will be our two contestants. We take two contestants, play one full round each with you. So you call now, get in here, 312-981-7200, and we'll get a couple of contestants ready to play Know Your Onion. And again, Tom will read you a headline. You have to decide whether or not it's real or it's from The Onion, and then you win. That's how it works. 312-981-7200. Know Your Onion. Coming up. Yeah. The Nick DiGiulio Show is continuing here on this Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday, where you pick the music, and it is any artist, any song, anything. Tom Hush is my producer. Tom, who requested the ELP?
That is coming to us all the way from Peter in Sauk Village.
Peter in Sauk Village, enjoying a little Emerson, Lake, and Palmer this morning as Wild Card Wednesday continues. All right. Yeah. You know what? It's time to play Know Your Onion as we continue the Nick DiGiulio Show on this Wednesday morning. Every Wednesday morning after 3:30, we play Know Your Onion. Once again, it's a game that we play with a listener, two listeners, actually. One round each. And it is Tom is your host. He reads you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. Because the news now is so weird that you can't tell the difference between a real one and an Onion headline. And that's the game. It's that simple. Tom, shall we begin?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Yeah, I like when the band shows up. And we get 60,000 people in the studio every time we play Know Your Onion.
You love to see it.
They just cram right in. So there it is. By the way, that's probably going to end up on the show on Friday morning. brother. Okay. So that's it. Know Your Onion. We're ready to go. You ready, Tom?
Let's do this.
All right. Let's say hello to our first contestant. This is Bob in Oak Park. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. You familiar with The Onion?
I used to read it when it was in paper form.
Ah, okay. So you're familiar with it then?
Yeah.
Okay. You just have to figure out whether these news headlines that Tom reads to you are real or they're from The Onion. So you answer real or The Onion. Got it?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, Tom. Here we go.
All right, Bob. Your first headline. Fox News condemns 2020 presidential election as a partisan witch hunt orchestrated by Democrats to unseat the president. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'll say it's real.
Let's see. No, that is an Onion headline.
See, this is what I'm talking about. I thought that was a real headline, too.
Anything's possible these
days. That's what I'm saying. All right. Okay, you got to get... Bob, you got one wrong. You got to get a majority out of five right. So try again.
Okay.
All right, Bob, your next headline. The 2020 Tokyo Olympics. Athletes are assured that cardboard beds won't collapse during sex. Is that real or is that The Onion?
What?
Yes. Athletes are assured that cardboard beds won't collapse during sex. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, I'll say it's so bizarre that it's real.
Let's see.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
yes,
true.
Very real.
Yeah.
That's coming to us from News 18.
All the beds, everything is recyclable that they're doing this year. It's green. The Olympics are going to be totally green. And they talked about how the beds were going to be made of cardboard. And the first concern with the athletes was like, can we have sex on these things? That was like their first concern.
I will say in the story, they do recommend that athletes remain in a two-partner situation in order to prevent any sort of mishaps.
Yeah, that's so funny that was their main concern. Okay. All right. You're one for one, Bob. One and one. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Your next headline, Bob. The new LSU stadium shuttle transports Tigers fans back to the woods. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, that's another bizarre one. Well, I'll go real.
Let's see. No, they will not be transporting Clemson Tigers fans back to the woods.
Although
I'm sure they wish they did.
That's funny.
I'm sure they wish they did.
Okay, Bob, one more, and you're out.
Oh no!
Yeah. So make this one. Put your thinking cap on this morning.
All right. Your next headline, Bob. A British company will sell knives with square tips after a sharp rise in knife crime. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well, I'll go real again.
Let's see. Very good.
Yeah. Where's that from?
That's coming to us from insider.com. There's a company that, because there's so many knife crimes in the UK, they're making these crazy-looking knives that literally have, like, shaved-off tips or squared-off tips.
Is that going to prevent people from slicing other people with a knife? I mean, maybe the stabbing the stabbing crimes will go down, but the slicing crimes aren't going to go down.
No, I suppose not, but you're less likely to get stabbed by them.
Okay.
Which is nice, I suppose.
That's just and you say that was in the UK?
That's in the UK. A British company will be selling knives with square tips.
Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure what to say to that, but that's strange.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Bob, you got to get this one right in order to win. If you get it right, you win. If you get it wrong, you don't.
All right.
Okay.
Your final headline. Cash-strapped men's warehouse now offering free measurements of whatever the hell you want. Is that
real? Say it again?
Yeah. Cash-strapped men's warehouse now offering free measurements of whatever the hell you want. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Well. I'll go real.
Let's see.
Oh, no.
No, unfortunately no, not. They no. are not going to measure whatever
the
hell
you
want.
I love that you thought that was real, Bob.
Well, it was a guess.
Yeah, all right, okay. Well, let's see. Bob gets himself a desktop indoor weather station, and that's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. Bob, hold the line. Hang on. We got one more contestant to get around through, and then we'll get all the information that we need so that you can get your prize. So, Bob, hold on, and thank you for playing. All right. Are we ready for our second contestant of the morning?
Absolutely.
All right. Here is Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Okay. That's the rough round.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Spanish Fleet gets you every time.
Every time. Every time.
All right. Paula, your first headline, Free at Last. A Utah man locked inside 24-hour fitness recounts his experience. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I don't even understand that.
Sure, let me read it to you again. Free at Last, a Utah man locked inside a 24-hour fitness recounts his experience.
Oh, okay, I'll say real.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Very good, Paula, very, very good.
How do you get locked inside a 24-hour fitness if it's 24 hours? If it's open 24 hours, how do you get locked?
Leave him in there.
But it's not. It doesn't close. How do you get locked into a place that doesn't close?
I think the 24-hour fitness is a bit of a misnomer. I don't think it's literally open 24 hours.
There are a lot of gyms that are open 24 hours.
Apparently not this one in Utah. It's coming to us from ABC in Utah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was like, what? How can that be possible if they're open 24 hours? Unless he was locked like in a locker inside the 24-hour fitness. All right. Well, you got one right, Paula.
All right. Your next headline, Paula. A Kansas man asks Iowa judge for trial by combat with ex-wife. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Onion. That's a guess.
Let's see. Ooh, That is a very real headline coming to us from the Associated Press. A man in Kansas has asked his divorce lawyer in Iowa for trial by combat.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
A Marriage Story 2.
Yeah.
Enter the Thunderdome.
Exactly. All right. You're 1-1, Paula. One right, one wrong.
All right. Let's move to your next headline. Pete Buttigieg. Presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg blames inability to disclose political stances on an NDA with the Buttigieg campaign. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Real.
Let's see.
No.
No. That is an Onion headline.
Yeah, that's definitely an Onion. That's definitely an Onion headline.
But that's okay.
Okay. Well, you got it. You, Paula, you can't get another one wrong. Okay.
Yeah, tough.
All right. Your next headline. You got to stay alive here. Space Force Bible blessing at National Cathedral sparks outrage. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Onion.
Well, let's see. No, that's a very real headline.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah, the official Bible of the Space Force was blessed at the National Cathedral.
Yeah, official Bible of the Space Force. Well, Paula, you don't go home empty-handed. You got a desktop indoor weather station. It's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com, and thanks for playing. And hold the line, Paula.
Thank you.
Okay, there you go. That was a tough round. That was a pretty tough round. I mean, there were some ones in there that fooled me, and clearly, judging by the fact that we didn't have a big winner out of the two contestants that played, it wreaked a little havoc on our listeners. So, we will do it again next week, as we do every Wednesday morning, with Tom Hush as your host. And you just got to know the difference between what's real and what's The Onion. And it gets weirder and weirder every week. So we'll do it again next week after 3:30. So we were talking about cop shows as we continue with the show. And what were some of the ones that, Tom, what were some of the ones that you liked as well that maybe didn't get mentioned?
How are we
going to
do it today?
You know, it was, they got pretty much all of them, especially The Wire. That's like the cop show to end all cop shows. I'm trying to think of some that I was really, really into, but I gotta throw it in there for Life on Mars again.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Do you remember the American remake?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
With, oh my God, what he's in like every, Scorsese, he's in Mean Streets and he's in,
Keitel.
Yeah, Harvey Keitel was in it. Yeah. He was the like bad cop, and it was an all right series. Lasted the one season, but you know,
yeah, it was good.
Okay.
It was good, but the original is, I mean, the original is much better, which is usually the case for, you know, shows that are based on foreign shows.
Yeah.
They usually end up not being as good as the original.
Yeah,
which. Is actually not the case of like The Office, because I mean The Office. I don't think The Office, the American version of The Office, is as good as the British version, Gervais and Merchant's version of it. But it grew into its own,
which I really liked. I liked that they went for a more American humor sensibility.
Yeah,
as they should.
Yeah. So. It was very cool because we were just talking about the cop shows. And again, if you want to throw in like your thoughts, we would love to hear from you in a text or a call. We want to wrap up the show here and wrap up maybe the cop TV show talk. 312-981-7200. I was really happy to see Top of the Lake in there because not a ton of people saw that show.
Yeah, I know it was. On Hulu.
Well, yeah, but it started out on.
It started on AMC. Was that a
no? Sundance.
Really?
Yeah, it was either It was one of those channels. It was either Sundance or IFC. I can't remember. I know that it's available now streaming on a bunch of, you know, a bunch of places and Hulu and stuff. But I watched it on regular cable, and I thought it was, you know, I thought it was great. And, you know, you can't argue Jane Campion. And, I mean, obviously, Elizabeth Moss. It's just...
Those two work together real well.
They do. They do. Personally, I think Elizabeth Moss works together really well with everybody. with everybody. Because she's seriously my favorite actress on the planet right now. And I knew she wasn't going to get even thought of for a Best Actress nomination for the Academy Awards, even though she gave the best performance by any human this past year. But, and if you haven't seen Her Smell, which was number one on my list of the best movies of the year, it is running on HBO right now as we speak. So you can watch it on the device. You can watch it on demand, and you know, check your local listings to see when they're going to broadcast it on the HBO channel proper. It's not an easy movie to sit through. It's a very intense experience, and I don't think it's for everybody. But if you want to see an actress at the top of her form, giving a truly, truly exceptional and remarkable performance, I highly recommend it. So, anyway, speaking of TV, tomorrow it's time for our biweekly talk with Dan Feinberg. Lots to talk about with Dan. Lots. So Dan Feinberg joins us. He is a Hollywood Reporter TV critic, and he joins us every other week to talk about TV. You can check him out at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and that's where you can follow him and read all his articles, and you can also check him out at the Hollywood Reporter website. And we always have a great time talking with Dan about TV. And then Exploring Transcendental Meditation and Near-Death Experiences with Valerie Genghis. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that near-death experience and transcendental meditation. I've never done meditation.
It's kind of a game changer. It really is.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Never done it. I think I should, because I'm such a head case. Seriously, I am. I'm a total head case.
You know, you'd be surprised.
You know,
you'd be surprised.
I can't clear my head. You know, I worry about everything. I can't sleep. So maybe if I meditate, that might change things a little bit. But I've never done it, so I don't know if I would freak out. See, I would even worry about that. Like, in the middle of meditation, I'd be like, I'm worried that this meditation is going to make me freak out.
Yeah, take a chill pill, Nick.
That's always the way I've been, man. Always the way I've been. That's why it takes me over 90 minutes to fall asleep every time I go to bed. Can't turn the brain off. Can't turn the brain off. It's weird because I don't really have a big one. Oh, God. That's going to show up on the show on Friday.
You're really shooting yourself in the
foot. I just have to be quiet. You know, I really do.